ending story. It has a happy ending. Oh, okay.
Sponsored by Come Get It Records 2012. We support Brian the Hammer Jackson, and so should you.
Hi, this is Sally Kirkland, and I'm on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson, and I do want to have his baby.
Ah, Sally. You just want more, don't you, baby? Good morning, everybody. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. Good morning, Diane. Diane is our board producer. How are you? Sorry I'm late.
Good morning. I'm fine.
Good morning. Yes, you are. Quit bragging. Is my co-producer on the board, bro, there? Jeffrey Bertrand. Is he there?
He's here, but not here.
Okay, that's good. It's like our audience.
Yeah.
They're here, but they're not.
For his mouth.
I know. Sorry I'm late. How long was I late? Maybe a minute, huh?
Yeah, just about a minute.
Okay, everybody, we have a good show today. We have a fast show today. We have some dignitaries coming on the show today. Sorry, Singer. And Senator Robert Singer will be here. We're going to be discussing a little thing that's going on right now about Hegel and about Israel, the state of Israel, what's going on there, and how the U.S., are we protecting Israel or are we not? Are we just letting Israel hang them by themselves, or we're using Israel as our puppet to do things that we don't want to do ourselves? I don't know. We're going to shed some light on that. We're going to get right to this because we've got a lot of stuff going on. I usually don't do pre-radio talk. Once in a while, I'll call Diane, and I'll talk to Jeff before the show goes on. And one of the concerns that Jeffrey Bertrand had was he asked me, did you see the latest thing on what's going on with the Catholic Church, what's going on with specifically Cardinal Mahoney? I think the cataholics are up in arms, as well as they should be. I got a feeling there's a revolution going on in the Catholic Church. I got a feeling that the followers of the Catholic Church are tired of this. And I got a feeling there's going to be a big revolution going on, and I think the church may have to change some things. What we're hearing right now is just rumors, and according to Mr. Jeffrey Bertrand, what's going on is that there's hoopla with Cardinal Mahoney voting for the next pope. And we all know the story about Cardinal Mahoney, and we're talking about headline news before we get to the big subject regarding Israel, but this is some of the headline news we're going to talk about really quickly. Some people are up in arms that he is voting for the new pope. He is a cardinal who tried to cover up a lot of stuff about priests who were doing hideous things to young boys. And so he's on the firing range, if you want to call it that. He's on the front lines here about things he has covered up, removing priests to other countries so they don't get indicted, and trying to keep the church in good light. But therefore, by moving certain priests, it just encourages, not encouraging, but just more and more victims are coming forward of a particular priest that they have put elsewhere, of just leaving a trail of little victims. Did I get that correct, Diane?
Yes, you did.
Okay. So what we're going to do right now, since we're going to go really fast, is we're going to go right to the story. This is a Cardinal Mahoney story right here, and then we're going to get into our big story about Israel. But here goes. Let's go to the tape. This is according to, I don't know. Let's go to the tape because it's not telling me who is it by.
In Los Angeles today, there was more fallout from the child sex abuse scandal that has...
This is from CBS News. Here we go.
...rocked the Roman Catholic Church. The head of the largest diocese in America stripped his predecessor of all public duties, and Bill Whitaker has more on that story.
Public duties. Well, last I heard, this is what's wrong with the Catholic Church. Last I heard that you should go to the bathroom in private, don't you think, Diane? All right, I'm not doing any judgment. Let's go right to the tape of CBS.
Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez took the unprecedented action against Cardinal Roger Mahoney soon after the release of tens of thousands of secret church files, which included names of priests accused of molesting children.
In a letter last night, Gomez apologized to victims. The behavior described in these files is terribly sad and evil, he wrote. The priests involved had the duty to be their spiritual fathers, and they failed. These files are the strongest evidence yet that former Archbishop, now retired Cardinal Roger Mahony, and his chief aide, Monsignor Thomas Curry, plotted to conceal the abuse from police. In one correspondence in 1988, Curry wrote, "The whole issue of our records is a very sensitive one, and I'm reluctant to give any list to the police." Archbishop Mahony's handwritten response, "We cannot give such a list for no cause whatsoever."
I think it's a good Friday today. It's a really good Friday.
70-year-old Udo Stratinsky says he was abused by a priest while in Catholic high school. He says he felt abused again when higher-ups threatened to throw him out of school if he told.
These documents prove that we were telling the truth, literally. It's independent proof.
Today, victims held a quilt with photos of the abused. Esther Miller says she was abused by a church deacon at age 16.
Today means bittersweet. It's victorious. We were dealing with a giant called God.
Scott, we were unable to reach Monsignor Curry. In a statement today, Cardinal Mahony said he has already apologized. If he could undo past mistakes, he would, but he can't.
Bill Whitaker in our Los Angeles newsroom.
And that's the report. We had a discussion, me and Jeffrey Bertrand, before the show. And two things have really offended me with what's going on with this and when they make the statement, especially the church, when they make a statement on this. They call the incident a mistake. Instead of calling it a tragedy, injustice, violation, rape, child abuse, child molestation, the Catholic Church is calling it a mistake.
Diane,
you're a Catholic. What do you think of that language?
Yeah, a mistake.
It's a mistake. Exactly. To me, it was a mistake. I should have did his brother.
What was the mistake that I got caught hiding these priests, shuffling them all over the West Coast?
That is true. Not to mention the priest that was infamous for doing this in Mexico, and Cardinal Mahony brought him into the United States, therefore leaving a trail of 21 other victims with innocent boys being vandalized by this priest. And was also another statement that is chilling. It's the last woman who said this, "We're fighting a giant. We are fighting God." That's a chilling statement in itself. I'm going to see if I can rewind that. I hope I heard that correctly. When I hear that statement, how do you feel about that, Dan? Let me see if I can get that.
Monsignor Curry. Today.
Let me see if I can get that. That is a very chilling soundbite.
Prove that we were telling the truth. Literally.
I'm curing it up again. Listen to this lady again.
Today, victims held a quilt with photos of the abused. Esther Miller says she was abused by a church deacon at age 16.
Today means bittersweet. It's victorious. We were dealing with a giant called God.
Wow.
And that's a victim.
That's a victim. And in her mind, she was dealing with a giant called God. Okay, really quickly, we're not going to stay on this subject that long, but I'm going to say we had this discussion earlier, bro. This is Jeffrey Bertrand I'm talking to, and Diane. We had this statement earlier, or this discussion. Pope Benedict is resigning from a pope. This hasn't happened before.
600 years over.
Okay. Jeff brought up, well, his health, you should see the guy, you know, when he speaks, he shakes and everything like this. And then I just brought up a question to Jeff. Is it more, I got to really be careful what I say. I want to say the word prestigious, honorable. Is it more honorable to die being a pope, even if you have some kind of maybe terminal disease? Or is it more honorable to resign as pope? What does it say to the Catholic Church? And I'm just going to go with you two, and we'll go off this subject. And I know your opinion, Jeff, and I'm going to get to you. What about you, Diane? Is it, even though you're sick, and I know there's been popes who are older, they had diseases and everything, and they died carrying out their, how can I say it, agenda. So is it more honorable to die as a pope or to resign?
I think to die.
I agree with you. How about you, Mr. Jeffrey Bertrand?
I would have to say die. That's why one hasn't resigned in over 600 years.
And do you really believe that he's resigning because of health issues?
In my heart of hearts, I'd have to say no.
Yeah. I think there's another shoe that's about to be dropped probably within the next 2 or 3 weeks. And we'll get the real reason why he's resigning, because I got a feeling that once this is out of the closet, now you gay people don't write me, I got letters. But once this is out of the closet, there's going to be more things coming out. And I got a feeling we haven't heard the end of this. And this resignation is going to be something of a very black mark on the church, I feel. This is just me. I don't know anything, but I got a feeling I don't like what's happening here. How about you, Diane?
No, I don't like it either.
Yeah, there's something creepy going on, and we just don't know what it is. Stay tuned.
I have a feeling it's going to be a snowball effect of even more horrors, unfortunately.
Oh, I think so, too. I think so, too. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on this. All right, while we're waiting for a guest, we have some letters.
Oh, good. I love letters.
One of our guests was mentioned in the letters this time.
Where's the letter music?
All right, let's cue the letter music.
Like that little...
I don't know why you like the letters. They usually hate us and want to burn us. But, okay, it's cute.
Entertainment.
All right, let's cue the letter music, and we have some letters. Here we go. They are lengthy, and we can't read all of them, so we'll just pick out the good ones who like us.
Okay.
Okay, there is none.
I was going to say, how'd that happen?
I know it. I'm going to write a good letter of us, so let's see. Letter music. I don't have the letter music. Do you see it, Diane, so we can start the letters and go on with our show? Oh, here we go. Ready?
Okay.
Letters from Brian the Hammer Jackson Show.
Thank you so much for dropping me a line. I must not have gotten to my phone on time. It's either that or I didn't hear it ring. So please leave me a message when you hear the ding.
Ding. Okay. Let's listen to some of the people who listen to us. Dear Brian, I heard your show yesterday, and I heard Kat talk about, and I refer to her Kat if you didn't hear the show yesterday, Kat was talking about deadbeat dad. She didn't get alimony payment. She's married to a guy who's a director. He's an Oscar winner. She's having a hard time collecting alimony, and we went to the whole show about deadbeat dads. And we knew we were going to get letters. Dear Brian, I listened to your show regarding deadbeat dads. It seems one-sided. It seems like you are for the women, and what about us men? Thank you very much. I'm not going to read the rest because it has four-letter words and SOBs in it. We have another letter. Dear Brian, I heard you on the show yesterday. Kat, I adore her. She's funny. And I love Robin. Robin was very nice, and she has some great advice. Thank you, Brian, for sharing the show. That's a happy letter.
That's a good one.
Oh,
okay.
Hey, dang, on that note, Brian, mm-hmm. I forgot to give you my contact number. Remind me after today's show to give that name to you for
Kathy.
For Kathy.
Okay, okay, cool. Cool, yeah. You mean Kat, right?
Pardon?
Kat, Kathy Kat, same
Kat,
one?
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, cool. No, I just wanted to make sure. Fantastic. And she was a great guest, and we loved her. And Kat, you're listening. I know she is. Please come back on. Okay, I think Kelly's with us. I'm not sure. Is that you writing to me, Diane,
no.
Or is that Kelly writing to me?
Kelly.
Okay. Kelly is my executive producer. Kelly is in Kansas right now, and they seem to have some kind of snowstorm that it's just going crazy, and there's snow in Arizona. So if you're thinking about global warming, you might want to think again. It might be happening. They're snowed in. They can't get out. She's losing her internet, and when she can, she'll come on the show and she'll give me good things. She was supposed to come on the show to let me know about an attorney, and I can't wait to have him on. His name is R.K. Hendricks. He is an attorney and a judge. An attorney and a judge. Nothing. Okay, I'm impressed. He will be coming on the show. He has a book coming out. He's an author, and he'll be on the show Tuesday talking about men's rights and the judicial system on men. And hopefully he will be a person that when we have serious subjects, he will come on the show time to time to speak on those subjects. And if you have any questions or you need to seek an attorney or advice, he's more than welcome to come on the show and talk to you. How's that, you guys?
That's awesome.
So screw you, letter haters.
I love the title of his book. I can't remember it verbatim, but I love the title of
his. I do too. And we'll get that title later on in the show. So that was it with the headlines with the priests. What's going on? I think the Catholics are getting upset, which is about damn time. They're not going to take this anymore. I think there's going to be a change, and I think there's going to be a shoe that's going to be dropping pretty soon. Big bomb reason why Pope Benedict is resigning. Sorry is here, and we would go to more headline news, but I think it's more important to welcome our guests and get to it. Let's welcome Sari right now, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I just want to say something. When Sari's on, hello, Sari, I love you. Welcome to the show.
How are you? I love coming to your show.
Do you?
Back me up. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good. I'd love to have you on. You bring sense. We got the bodyguards and everything for you. And just in case things get so heated, when you hear this gavel.
What gavel?
There should be one.
Oh, there it is.
There you go. That means the sergeant at arms will walk you out of this room. we have our bodyguards circle. Sorry.
Heated. Things aren't going to get heated.
She is. I call her the first lady of the Brian and Hammer Jackson show.
I like that.
What we're going to do is we're going to get right into this. First, we're going to talk about Israel. We're going to talk about Hegel. But first, I'd like you to make a comment on Rush Limbaugh. Is that okay?
You want me to make a comment on him?
Yeah, we're going to play a Rush Limbaugh tape. I think I have it.
Okay.
He's talking. I know we want to
talk. I hate politics, so it's kind of funny.
But sorry, let me ask you. Are you registered as a Republican? We talked about this before.
Yes,
do you register?
Absolutely.
You are a Republican.
I am a Republican. I believe in I think my generation of Republican voters are different than the very conservative Republican voters. Mm. You know, I think that things to me, if they make sense, and I don't always vote on the party line. If I believe in somebody, I think they're right. As a Republican, I'll vote for them. If I don't think they're right, I'm not going to give my vote to somebody that I think might be detrimental to this country or detrimental to any, you know, to the state that I live or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, but I do align myself and look more towards Republican ideology a little bit. Maybe also because I don't like some of the Democrats that I see and what they're doing. So it kind of automatically makes me want to be Republican.
Yeah, I hear that. And the new face of the and this is scary because I am a Democrat. The new face of the Republican Party is strong. What do you think about Rubio?
I don't know too much, and I haven't researched too much just because I've been busy over the last 2 months with a number of things, and I don't really, you know, I don't really do a lot of in terms of other politicians. I kind of focus on, you know, I'll hear what's going on in New Jersey and with what my dad's doing a little bit. And some of the stuff that may directly impact, you know, people and world, you know, the international, global, you know, I guess safety and security for everybody. But when it comes to individual Republicans, I don't really have too many comments on different individuals unless I really think they're not good for, you know, for the people.
Okay. And I'll tell you what the new, what the Republicans are doing good, and it's very scary because I am a Democrat. And I said this before after the election and what's happening, and I have Nick coming on too. Nick, I love you. He's our political scientist. You would not believe this. Arizona is the most conservative state I know. They have the most conservative immigration laws and how they feel about this, blah, blah, blah. And the senator of Arizona is McCain.
Right.
I don't believe what I'm hearing with Senator McCain here. It is scaring me. He's talking about, he's talking about amnesty, as far as I'm concerned. Are you hearing this about the immigration laws and he's pushing this? It's basically amnesty. The Republicans never talk about amnesty. And what I respect about McCain, what he said about maybe 2 months ago, he said this. He broke it down in voting. He says the reason we're losing, I'm paraphrasing, reason we're losing the elections is because a percentage of the Latino, the Mexican-American community are voting Democrat. And he's saying we have to change this. So now he's pushing this immigration law, which is, quote, amnesty, I think, and we'll debate if it is or not. And Nick, I'm sure, has a lot to say on that. So what I'm asking you, Miss Sorry, First Lady of Brian Hammer Jackson Show.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with what McCain is doing, and do you agree what he's doing, or do you have any information? Are you familiar about this new amnesty thing, or I'm sorry, immigration law that they're trying to pass through?
It's so. I'm not familiar with it, honestly. Again, it's funny because you're the one person I talk politics with on the radio. I don't usually talk politics, but I don't mind it. Maybe this is where I come a little differently. I agree with a little bit in terms of immigration laws. I mean, there's too many problems here, and we need to figure out how to solve the problem with all these different, you know, factors with regard to immigration instead of things just staying the way they are. And I think that people have to put aside their party lines and really work together. And I think that McCain is kind of bringing forward, you know, ideology and ideas of wanting to work together to, you know, make things better. And why not?
I agree wanting to work things better, but another thing is open our border. I know the people in Texas are up in arms here.
Well,
we got the cartel. The Mexican cartel is like has a Golden Gate, a freeway. Come onto our country because of our relaxed immigration law. What message are we sending out? I mean, they're coming. People in Texas are pissed.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't. This is an area and a realm that I totally, as you can tell, am not well versed in. And I mean, you could ask my dad about this, and he'll probably
you sound so
the entire
cute doing
show
it,
about it.
You sound so cute saying it. I just listen to you talk.
Talk to you about security. Talk to you about terrorism. I can see
it.
That. You know,
you
but we elect these people. You know, we have to take some responsibility as citizens of this country. We elect these people into office to serve in our best interest. So it kind of makes me wonder what's going on in some of the states of who they're electing into these positions if people are not, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And, you know, but what I think the bigger picture, sorry, is that I think the Republican Party is getting a facelift. I think, and I said this about a month ago or 2 months ago, I said if the Republican Party, they're going to make a statement this year. You guys watch what they're going to do. Either they're going to put a Latino guy in the forefront or a woman in the forefront as far as one of the – they lost with Michelle Bachmann. Forget about this. Sarah Palin, okay, it's embarrassing. But watch this. For them to turn around that party, it would have to put a minority face in there, I guarantee you it will be a Latino leading the leading candidate for the Republican Party in the next election. And opening up our forum today, I want to welcome our political scientist, Mr. Nick Garoff. How are you doing, Nick? How are you?
Hey, Brian. Not too bad.
Great. I want to introduce you to Sari. Sari, this is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, Sari.
I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
I am, too. And what's your view on this?
We're talking immigration now?
Well, we're talking... We're
going to
talk about Israel in about 10 minutes, but yes, right now...
Well, we can get on... I mean, I can sort of touch on, like, the issues with the GOP and immigration sort of at the same time. Now, you're right in the sense that, like, the GOP is going to be looking, you know... It's looking to change its image because it's you know, let's call it its market brand, is it's no longer selling. And that's largely because it's given itself way too easily over to its fringe. I mean, the rise of the Tea Party. Initially, the Tea Party was a Ron Paul-inspired, libertarian-leaning, you know, anti-tax, anti-government movement. I mean, we can debate the merits of that, but... You know, what it rapidly turned into is the same thing that everything else in the Republican Party turns into, and that's a mouthpiece for big corporate interests, for big money interests. You know, it went from individual tax rates to, you know, we need to keep offshore tax havens and we need to keep low income for job creators. It turned into a standard neoconservative GOP line. What that spoke to more, though, and something that you really have to have followed it, especially since around 2008, to really follow like developments on the right wing, because there have been really sort of internal, I guess, you know, civil strife, internal, you know, battles between elements and factions that comprise that party. There's a joke my dad's fond of when it comes to Democrats and liberals trying to get them on the same page, like trying to herd cats. And that's because generally, you know, it's a big, big, big tent. Like liberalism itself is designed, you know, is designed philosophically to be a big tent idea. In that, the GOP and the right wing have, you know, their successes over the last several decades have come, you know, largely out of the Reagan era when he issued the 11th commandment, "Thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican."
Republican. Yeah.
Yeah, and what that comes back to is, they've been able to survive despite what is, in my opinion, a long history and a long series of very bad, very destructive ideas, such as wild orthodox free market capitalism without conscience, corporatism, nepotism, all that shit. They've been able to survive despite these things because of their ability to maintain unity within their own ranks. You know, they may have the libertarians and the neoconservatives arguing up a storm about, you know, tax or trade policy or foreign policy and this sort of thing. But when it comes down to it and they say, all right, you know, either line up behind our guy or, you know, go vote for that, you know, pinko liberal, they all have typically lined up. Now, Ron Paul in 2008 had one of his best showings ever, and that guy's been running for president for decades. And he's been doing something that typical libertarians, the Libertarian Party itself has been trying to grow on its own, and it has been failing because it's, you know, it only has limited applicable reach. Ron Paul came in and started doing, you know, he started basically aiding the libertarian philosophy and having a real insurgency into the GOP, which at that point, you know, it was Reaganite conservatism, it was evangelical Christianity, it was corporate conservatism. The libertarians started finding themselves having a stronger influence. That has sort of evolved into, in a sense, like the modern Tea Party, which is why you have guys like, you know, you have Mitt Romney, who's your classic Republican, you know, rich, white, male, his Mormonism, like, set him apart a little bit, but really what it came back to was, you know, he had very fundamentalist, Christian American values. You had him running with Paul Ryan, who said Ayn Rand was his inspirational, philosophical inspiration.
And I have to disagree with you at one point, and then we're going to go and we'll start the show. I think the old Reagan Republican Party would not even allow Mitt in the party.
Well, you wanted to touch on the immigration thing, though. You know, you were saying how it changed the tone. Keep in mind, the last real serious sweeping immigration reform that was, you know, labeled amnesty was Reagan. That was, you know, that was Reagan's doing. That was Reagan's policy. You know, that was Reagan's era, and it was his immigration plan. And that granted a lot of amnesty to people. And the GOP were up in arms saying, "Oh, we're, you know, giving all these illegals, and the sky's going to fall, and, you know, they're going to, you know, there's going to be no more cherry pie or baseball, or apple pie or baseball." And what happened was, is, you know, these people, like, you know, they did what they came here to do. They got jobs. They rooted. They had families. They became Americans, and they pay their taxes. And one of the big reasons that immigration, especially now, is starting to divide them is because a lot of the old, you know, a lot of the old hawks really like to, like, stay on the old lines, especially because their constituencies still have a xenophobic sort of fear of immigrants. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the ones who are actually dealing with it, like McCain, and McCain's a whole separate issue, but the things that people forget, though, is that especially since our, you know, economic problems have continued to sort of turn over and turn over as they have, border traffic, like they used to talk about it in 2006 and 2007, simply isn't real anymore. There are far, far, far fewer immigrants trying to get into the U.S., and there are actually increasing numbers of them leaving because the opportunities aren't here.
What I'm afraid, I agree with you, Nick, but what I'm afraid of is that we cannot, this fake war, and sorry I haven't forgotten you, this fake war on drugs was started, who started this war on, I don't know if it was Carter, who started this, Clinton, was it the Clinton
Nixon
administration? War on drugs, or just say no, Nancy, it was, anyway, and this crap, here's what's happening in Texas. Our country, United States of America, in my point of view, is under siege. Here's what's happening. If we don't do something with this immigration law, what's going to happen is a cartel are slowly coming in. They're already creeping into the United States. When Nick just said, we're not really even paying attention to our borders anymore.
Right.
If we are, we don't have the funds to fund it. And come on, please, want to put a fence on it? What's going to happen, what's even more serious than just, illegal aliens coming over here, getting our jobs, blah, blah, here's what's the underlying seriousness of. The Mexican cartel is invading the United States. That's the problem with immigration. And I can do another show. We're going to do it next week on Al Capo. This is a drug lord from Mexico who was operating in Chicago. And he just recently ran to Mexico. Check this out, you guys. This is going to infuriate you. I had this on my show last week, but I have to say this. And he made the Forbes list. Why would Forbes put a drug cartel guy on the list? And we had this, you and I had this little debate, right, Nick? You remember this.
Yeah.
Why not put other countries who kidnap Americans and hold them for ransom and get all this money, put them on the Forbes list? I have a problem with that. Okay, you guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go with the show. You can see that we're riled up. Sorry, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Nick, I know you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to conduct this very nicely, in appropriate form, very dignified. I'm going to be on my best behavior. And let's get the theme of it. Yeah. We're going to have a nice show, and let's get the theme of it and be respectful like we're in the White House. And so let's get the mood. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say thank you. I'm walking into my seat. Thank you. The gentleman in front row who's on the wheelchair, please sit down. Thank you. Thank you. You're embarrassing me. Thank you. Who would have thought a poor kid from Beverly Hills who went to school in a limo would ever become a head of a talk show? Not me, because I stole his identity. Anyway, I want you to know that we're having a nice discussion here. Some of you guys get a little rowdy. Please, this is an open discussion and open debate here. In this corner, in this chair, we recognize the gentleman, Nick Guroff. Nick also writes for theprogressivepress.net. Great online magazine, great political stories. Headline News, it's a great magazine. Nick has several articles on it. Check him out, Nick Guroff. In this corner here, we call her the First Lady of the Brian the Hammer Jackson Show, Sari. Sari's background is that I'm not going to call her an activist. I like to call her We Care. Her background is she travels throughout the world. She was, one time of her story is, she was in, were you in Israel at the time that you had a car bomb put in your face, Sari?
No.
Okay.
You're funny. I was on a bus in Jerusalem when a terrorist boarded and detonated. And,
wow.
Injured over 100 of us and murdered 16 innocent people, including everyone who was seated around me.
There you go. And she's very passionate about what's going on in Israel and the state of the United States' involvement with Israel and people who are attacking Israel. And so these are the people who are going to be talking. The chair. And Nick, where are you from, my friend?
I'm in New Hampshire right now.
New Hampshire. The chair will recognize the gentleman from New Hampshire.
That's what's up forever.
Oh, that's enough out of you.
What was your question? I didn't hear your question.
There was no question. We're just recognizing you.
Oh, well, good. I like it.
You're out of order. I will remove you.
There you are.
You're out of order, sir.
So what are we moving on to? Israel now, Chuck Hagel?
Okay. Mr. Joe Biden, will you please lock the door? All right, guys. We're going to have a good discussion. What we're going to listen to now is Rush Limbaugh. And then we're going to get to Israel, I promise. Sari, since you are the new face of the Republican Party.
Oh, Lord, no. No way.
The chair recognized Sari as a hostile Republican who don't want to listen to Rush Limbaugh, but we'll play it anyway. You have to take care. And here it goes. Rush, as you know, is the leader of the Republican Party. Some say he doesn't, but he has a strong voice. Would you say so, the gentleman from New Hampshire?
No, I wouldn't say he's the leader of anything. I'd say that, unfortunately, he has a big enough audience that his simplistic and emotional ideas can often be mistaken for sound thinking. But, he's in many ways, yeah, he's setting the tone, but he's setting the tone for the baseline fringe, which, you know, their investment and involvement in political matters is limited to reading headlines and then listening to news pundits like him explain them. They don't actually look too deep into them.
That's true. Please note that the gentleman from New Hampshire agrees with me.
Well, you agree with me.
That's true. All right, let's listen to Mr. Rush.
Learned analysts, elected officials, and virtually everybody, and they're all discussing this fiscal cliff issue, identically the same. They are all analyzing it through the same prism. They're all looking at it as though it's no different than any other budget negotiation in a history of the country in a budget. But I keep hearing something that genuinely puzzles me.
Math.
It's this. Math. Republicans have more leverage than they know. And you know why? I'll tell you why. It's said that the Republicans have more leverage than they know because Obama, he doesn't want a second recession. He already had one of those in his first term, and now he's in his second term. And now he's got to be concerned about his legacy. And there's no way that Barack Obama wants a second recession to kick off his second term, because that won't look good on his legacy. I'm dumbfounded by this. I'm perplexed. I am totally confused because...
We have a personal mission from Rush Limbaugh. He is dumb, he's perplexed, and he's confused.
I thought I was on the wrong station.
Wait, do we have the great senator that just came in? Let me
I don't know if it's a great senator, but you have a senator here.
Oh, it's a great senator. Ladies and gentlemen, this is
I got nervous. I got nervous when I heard Rush Limbaugh.
I'm glad you're here, sir. He's part of your party.
Well, I don't know if he's part of my party. I mean, he's a little bit too far to the right for me, but he certainly has some. He's certainly opinionated about some things.
Well, I want to. I was agreeing with your daughter, and we have the gentleman from New Hampshire, Nick Groff, is here, and we're talking about the new face of the Republican Party. We're going to talk about Hagel in about a couple of seconds, but to start this off, I'm so impressed with you. I am a Democrat. When you were on the show, I was really impressed with you. I'm impressed with your views. I consider you a liberal Republican. Is that a cuss word to you, sir?
No, but I rather consider it moderate than liberal. But I think it's dealing with the realization is that we have problems in this country that we have to address, and that let me give you an example. You know, the big thing in my state and across the country right now is the gun issue. If you take a look at the three top states that have probably the most extensive gun laws, it's California, it's New York, and New Jersey. And we require a four-way background check on anyone who gets a license to buy a gun. That means they have a local check, a county check, I mean state check, and a federal check, and then they have a mental health check. Well, if you adopted that same background check across the country, you would solve a great amount of the problems you're having. And that's not rocket science, and it doesn't cost a ton of money, and it doesn't deny anybody the right to own a gun. It just says we want to make sure that the people buying guns don't have a mental health problem. And remember, that's only a snapshot in time, but at least at that time. And also don't have a record or criminal thing behind them, anything else like that. Why won't every other state adopt that? That's not a difficult thing.
Well, Senator, in my opinion, the checks are bouncing because we can put these laws with these extensive background checks and things. If you look at the last killings was going on in California, the last shooting was from a cop, an ex-cop.
Right.
We just had a gentleman here. I'm not going to say gentleman. This guy
killed four people. Right.
Killed four people. Now, and that's the first time they had no criminal back record, no criminal record at all. Mentally, they were stable until something. How can we put laws about mental illness? I mean, it's hard to do that. I mean, come on. Are we?
Except wait one second. If you take a look at the Connecticut factor, that mother, for whatever reason, was trying to have her son committed, and Connecticut, that's very, very difficult. There has to be an easy path when you have a family member that has extreme mental health illness to be able to help find help for that individual. And that's not there right now because we've shortchanged mental health dollars constantly, both in this state and every state in the country, because it's always been taking a back burner, and it shouldn't take a back burner. But realistically, you know, you cannot prevent everything from happening. You know, when my daughter was in a bus bombing, here was a person getting on a bus who didn't care about their own life and blew themselves up. Now, you can't stop someone who doesn't care about their own life. And to keep thinking we're going to make a perfect world that by banning everything and going out, nothing's ever going to happen. If someone is committed to kill themselves and other people, they'll find a way, whether by a bomb, whether it's by stabbing, whether it's by a gun, they'll do something. But we cannot – we shouldn't say to people who legitimately want to own a gun – and look, my brother is a retired attorney that lives in Florida. was a criminal president of the Queens Bar, president of the Criminal Bar of Queens. Big, you know, those are big bar associations. And he has three guns. They go shooting, and many seniors down there do that. They have the right to do that. That's not a negative. That doesn't hurt anybody. The problem we have is that in a lot of states in this country, you can go there and with a driver's license buy a gun. That's not in California. That's not in New York. It's not in New Jersey. There's other states like that.
New Hampshire.
And those are the kind of things that we have to stop.
Well, okay, let me ask you something, Senator. And ladies and gentlemen, the great senator from New Jersey, I wanted to say, you know, I love you. You know I have to play devil advocate with you.
I know that.
Senator Robert Singer, everybody. And I love him to death. And I say this before I attack him.
Okay.
Senator, let me ask you a question. What about the rights of the mentally the mentally disabled, the mentally ill? Barring them, and I have to say this, barring them from doing certain things as it's constitutional, the Constitution says we have the right to bear arms. And if we take out certain groups that you cannot have guns because you are not mentally stable to have them, are we taking away their rights?
I don't believe that. First of all, let me say one thing to you. I am an advocate for the disabled. My nephew has Down syndrome. So as a family member, I understand some of these issues. My wife's family, her first cousins' children are autistic. So I live with some of these things as a family member, and my heart goes out to those families, and there are issues, and we have to deal with it. We don't spend enough time, money, and help to those people. That being aside, I think you have to look for the greater good. We're not denying people the right to bear arms, but we're putting some restrictions on it. And that restriction goes, just like you say, if you're a criminal, you can't. If you've had a criminal record, you can't own a gun. Well, mm-hmm. That's putting a restriction on. We're just saying if you have a mental problem, and that has to be determined what those mental problems are, that for the safety of every random, you shouldn't own a gun. I mean, I don't know what happened in Connecticut, why those guns weren't locked up. But meanwhile, it cost that woman her life, and that ill individual destroyed the lives of many, many families. And
true.
And very, very honestly, I don't think it's too much to say we have a right to protect children and families from harm's way because that person shouldn't own a gun, period. I mean, I don't find that as destroying their rights as an American. But in that same vein, people who legitimately want to own a gun and feel safer with a gun should have that right to do so, and I protect that right. You know, it's what we said before, we're friends. I protect the right for you to denounce what I say, to argue with me, and the right to stand and do that. Whether I agree with you or not, that is your God-given right. That is your right as an American citizen, and I will defend that 100%. Just like I'll defend the right of someone the right to own a gun legally. But we have to set down reasonable terms as to what legally is. In a lot of states, it's not reasonable.
Okay, I understand that. What's happening now, and you mentioned she had the gun. She bought the gun. She was mentally ill.
Correct.
He got it who was mentally ill. Now, is it fair? Now, the gun was not registered to him. He got access to the gun. He did his thing. Hideous, disgusting thing. He did it. Now, we should not attack her because legally she bought the guns. So why is the president going on in the United States, going on air saying we got to do better background checks and make sure the mentally ill don't get it when they were not registered with the gun in the first place? Why are we attacking them?
Well, I think in general, look, when these things happen, tragedies like this, it is the nature of politicians to solve everything by passing new laws.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes them feel good, and they believe it makes their constituents think they're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to step back a little bit and wait for the healing process before you do it. You know, we heard the Vice President of the United States said, "Go ahead and buy a shotgun." I mean, I don't know if you saw that interview yesterday. It was really comical. But the truth of it is, we want to rush to solve the whole problem. We can't. Look, in the city of Chicago, you have the strictest gun laws of any city in the entire United States. Yet there are more murders going on there than any other city. So just strict laws doesn't do it. Part of it is education. Part of it is again, those guns aren't being bought legally in Chicago. They're being bought outside of Chicago and brought into Chicago. I mean, there is that aspect that we're never going to be cure everything. And I think sometimes government tries to cure everything. there is no question about it that going to background checks, and I think even the strictest people that are pro-gun don't really have a major problem with background checks. I think in essence is that is a positive thing nationwide. But again, every time there's a tragedy, you're going to see a litany of legislation to try to cure it all. It's the nature of the beast. And the president is carrying on because he, even though that this stuff would not have changed what happened in Connecticut, it's his response to the terrible tragedy that all of us feel for the families that went on in Connecticut.
And that's why I like you, because you're right. It is a Band-Aid to make us feel safer, to make us feel better.
Absolutely.
But when we start putting these laws and we start, okay, we have to protect the citizens, each law we put in and it goes through, I think it hurts the citizens. Now in California, when school first ended, and Nicholas is on, and I'm going to bring Nick in right now, we had law enforcement going to kindergartens, elementary school, everything, standing by, welcoming people coming into the school, our kids. We had law enforcement cars parked across. This was not the United States of America anymore. One nut has terrorized the whole country. When school started, across the country, we're having police officers standing by our elementary schools and our high schools. And if a kid says something on the internet about he had a bad day at school, we got the cops banging down the doors because we're afraid that he may have some kind of intent to cause harm or shoot up a school.
Well, look, it's the nature of all of us to overreact. The problem is, once you pass laws that give no leeway, there's consequences we don't understand. For example, we've seen that the youngsters in second and third grade, if they make their finger like a gun and point it at somebody, get suspended from school.
Yes.
We had a kid that was suspended from school because she talked about her gun that shot bubbles. It was a bubble gun. You know,
yes.
And she talked about it in school, about her bubble gum. She's going to come and they could shoot with each other, the bubbles, and she got suspended. I mean, we overreact because unfortunately, we don't give that leeway in laws. As we've seen in our state, that what we consider a sexual predator, some of the laws that came about had undue consequence where innocent things happen and we've tagged people that for the rest of their lives. There's always that consequence when you give no leeway in laws. We've said to schools, you got to protect youngsters, anybody talking about guns, playing with guns. You know, being 65 years old, I grew up in an area where we played cowboys and Indians, we played soldiers, those were the movies that were on TV, those are the movies you went to see on a Saturday afternoon. We had guns, toy guns, we played toy guns, we played with dart guns. It was a nature. Nobody went around panic-stricken. Today, it's panic-stricken time, and unfortunately, it's the overreaction to a lot of the stuff, and we're seeing that consequence.
That is true. There's also a case where a kid, I think he was a kindergartner, a first grader, pretended to throw a grenade. It was a pretend thing, imaginary grenade in a sandbox. They suspended him.
Right. I mean,
and this overreaction causes panic. Panic causes chaos. Chaos causes anarchy. We have groups coming up now, Senator. The Sovereign, I think you might be familiar with it, the Sovereign People League. I don't know the correct name for it. Basically, they are against the federal government. They think they're unconstitutional, and they're starting their own government. I wish I could get the great name of you. Are you familiar with it? Nick,
no,
are you
not
familiar with it?
No.
Well, I mean, there's a number of things, and I mean, really, what we're seeing now, it's not so much like a rise in new groups and new thinking and new crazy people as much as just we're paying more attention to it. I know right now, you know, there's a whole swath of, you know, rich industrialists who, you know, just read, you know, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead over and over and over again to just reinforce their notions that, like, you know, their wealth is all their own and they made it all their own and they owe nothing to no one, and they want to go and start little enclaves and, you know, little tax-free, government-free, you know, libertarian enclaves and such. And, you know, I mean, really all we're seeing, though, and it kind of speaks to what the senator was just saying, it's, and what you were just saying, it's about reaction, it's about American culture. I mean, in terms of, like, gun violence, right? Now, notice we never have conversations about gun violence, really, on a national level, unless there's these big tragedies. And even when we have the conversations, we're not talking, you know, we're seldom talking about how to actually reduce overall gun violence. We're talking about how to prevent these isolated incidents of tragedy. And, you know, and it all feeds back into this the nature of, you know, our culture. We're a very emotional, reactive culture, and oftentimes on a mass level, we fail to really give issues and questions the thought that they really deserve, as we're more interested in really banging out the reaction to it. And that, you know, and you played Rush Limbaugh earlier. The reason guys like Rush and Glenn Beck and Hannity and you know, and the alarmists on the left, you don't get as much press because, like I said, it's like herding cats. They can't get a big enough audience. But the reason these people have the soapboxes that they do and the voices that they do is because people have become, you know, we live in an instant gratification society, and people have become so accustomed to having reactions and positions immediately after an incident has been brought up, as opposed to actually taking the time to explore the specifics and nuances to it, the overall truths to them, and really make a sound judgment as to what it is. I mean, he was speaking about, like, reactionary legislation with gun laws. And that's part of the thing, and then it just turns into a fight. Rather than actually having a discussion about what can we do to reduce gun traffic into the wrong hands, what can we do to reduce gun violence in general, we have these discussions. What do we have to ban? Where do we have to ban it? And how do we stop another Sandy Hook? Because no one's saying, very, very few people who are getting any kind of press are saying, how do we reduce gun violence in the south side of Chicago? They're saying, how do we prevent another Sandy Hook?
And you're right about one thing.
You can't prevent another Sandy Hook.
We go after legitimate people who legitimately own guns and thinks we're going to solve the problem by going after legitimate people. Those are not the ones of the problem. And in most cases, they're not legal guns. But the answer is, you're right. We don't do that because that doesn't sell newspapers, and that doesn't make in the front press. You know, look, I listened to the Hannity a little bit and the O'Reilly factor and stuff like that a little bit, and because sometimes I think it's balanced, sometimes it's not, and they can go far to the right in some of their opinion. Look, there's not everything that the President of the United States that I agree with, and not everything he does wrong that I don't agree with. I mean, there's a whole issue here of balance. I think the biggest problem facing the country today, and especially young people, is they don't know who to believe. They don't know if the president is telling the truth, if the Congress is telling the truth, if the local legislature. They are so turned off by the rhetoric, by the blame, by the lack of cooperation, by the concerns that are affecting young people about where – you know, think about one thing. Young people are graduating college. They were told, go to college, get the education, you'll get a decent job, and are coming out to no job. What is more disheartening than a young person who just spent 4 or 5 years in getting education can't find a job? Goes to basic things and can't find a job.
To kind of bridge the two, I mean, to bridge those exact two points, too, I'm 29, and you know, I've been politically active, but also, you know, professionally active in it for a number of years. So, like, obviously my views have, you know, I've been just up to my eyeballs in it for long enough. But what I notice is in my generation, the lack of faith that is put into conventional, institutional, parties and individuals and such, and arguments even, the lack of faith derived from that because of, you know, growing up and saying, well, they lied to me about going to college, just like, you know, oh, they, you know, the drug war's full of shit, but they're still telling us, you know, smoke marijuana and you're going to start raping people and this and that. But I've noticed this rise in these, and you can tell me if you've seen it too, these, like, you know, these really out there conspiracy theorists and conspiracy enthusiasts, like Alex Jones. I mean, he's like the Rush Limbaugh of an entire different breed of quote-unquote political thinkers now. And they buy into this because it's a romantic fantasy that gets the emotions up and it gets their interest, and their interest is piqued, and it gives them a whole platform to work on, and it harnesses that distrust that they have in them because things have just been so reactive and reactionary and broken. And it all comes back to it, like, people these days seem to just demand answers so fast. Like when the Hannitys or when Piers Morgan or when any of these talking heads come on TV and start you know, spouting out their ideology, it comes like sometimes the same day as an incident that they're trying to talk about, which to me, that says one thing before anything else, is that no one actually really took any time to seriously sit and think deeply and objectively on what it was they're talking about. So they're issuing these opinions, and people who want these opinions or just want any opinion, want any answer to these things, they're watching it and they're saying, well, yeah, that makes sense to me because there's no depth to it. It's all topical gloss, and it makes sense right off the bat. So they just adopt it and run with it, and then we find further problems down the road because the consequences of actions taken or not taken are themselves just, you know, it's just this continual glossing
over deeper truth. Let me share something with you, which is we all struggle with. You know, look, the concept that the president had that everyone in the United States should have health insurance is a positive thing. Nobody can argue that. That is not a negative. To wanting to say everyone should be secure knowing they have health insurance, that's no one can argue that point, legitimately so, and to say that's not a positive thing. The problem is that when you pass legislation at the dead of night, and that it was written by the bureaucracy, and that people voting on it never really read it and understood the consequence of it because they didn't take enough time, that's what is disingenuous about this. And let me just give you one example to tell you what's upsetting. I have a piece of legislation that just passed the Senate. It's going to the lower house and will be passed in the next few weeks. That's in the state of New Jersey, we required every college student must have health insurance to go to college. It was a requirement. If you didn't have health insurance, you had to purchase it from the school. Community colleges in the state of New Jersey, for 1 year, the cost of education is about $3,700 a year. So if you go to community college for a year for going two semesters, it's about $3,700 a year. And they offered a low-end health insurance policy of about $45 a month, which was affordable for the student. He paid the $45 or she paid the $45, and they paid their $3,700 for tuition, and that was their cost to go to community college, which was fine. Under Obamacare, they can no longer offer the $45 a month health insurance policy. Now the insurance policy goes to $2,200. So think about it. Their tuition is $3,700. Now they have to pay for a $2,200 health insurance. They can't afford it. So we have a piece of legislation that says it's no longer a requirement to have health insurance to go to college. Now, what did we accomplish? We took away the bare-bone policy, which at least providing policy insurance they were able to afford, and now they have nothing. That's a consequence of Obamacare.
Let me ask you something, Senator, on that. Let me ask you something. As more and more healthcare groups and HMOs and physicians get involved in the Obamacare Health Care Act, wouldn't the price go down a little bit more?
Well, here's the problem. It sounds good, except you have to take a look at some of the things that the consequences. You know, there's now a new tax of 2% on medical devices. Now, if I say to the average person, what's a medical device, they're going to say, oh, you must talk about a CAT scan. No. We're talking about a knee replacement, a hip replacement. Anything like that is a medical device. Now, where do you think – remember, these things don't cost $1,000. These cost tens of thousands of dollars. Who do you think is going to pay the 2%? The manufacturer? The doctor?
Taxpayer.
The taxpayer. So all I'm saying to you is, you know – As you think you're going to ratchet it down, here's another 2% that's being thrown on that somebody's got to pay, and somebody's device costs $25,000 and
$30,000. Well, if we're going to look to healthcare here, then especially with Obamacare and such, which you know, the less well-read and less like you know thinking, let's say elements on the left are cheering it as some grand victory. And I was out there actually, one of my first field campaigns that like was of any consequence was working on behalf of the. A union in the area here to promote that healthcare plan. And even then, I mean, I'm a single-payer advocate, and I'm ashamed of it. And I thought it was crap the more I learned it. The only saving grace was that it sort of modeled on Massachusetts' plan where there was a public option. But regardless of all that, what people have, you know, failed to realize is that, like, the problems that our healthcare system faces is the, you know, it's the corporate influence. It's the profiteering influence. I mean, last night on one of my favorite joke networks, CNN, they even had a story just about how these you know hospitals, like you know the little white cup that you get your pills in. Like you know, there was a man who had like I think a 2 week hospital stay, and he needed serious regular medication, and they billed those little white cups that you get ketchup in as, what was it, oral medicine devices. And, like, he racked up a $5,000 bill just on the white cups alone. And the problem is, I mean, I was in Florida for an HCA campaign a couple of years ago. They were unionizing the nurses there. Now, you know, the union side of it, that's a different discussion, whatever. But just the more we learned about the way the hospital chain worked, and the more that it genuinely, I mean, these businesses are in business. They're not in the business of care. They're in the business of making money. And this entire, you know, this entire healthcare reform legislation, you know, the health insurers and the, you know, the health industry, they came out of it against it topically on some respects. But really, most of this bill was crafted by their lobbyists. And this is
can I share one thing to you? There's a big misnomer that comes in, and it's not just in hospitals across the thing, something called nonprofit. When you label something nonprofit, nobody tells you that under that guise, you can pay anybody what you want to pay them. You know what I'm saying, too? In other words, you can be a charity and pay somebody $5 million a year to be the head of the charity. It's perfectly legal. So we don't say to hospitals, you're a nonprofit, you don't pay taxes on your property, you don't do this and that, but how much do you pay the head of the hospital? How much do you pay the head of the... In other words, we don't regulate them to say, if you're going to take that status as nonprofit, which is really costing the taxpayer, there should be some regulation of how you operate. We don't do
by the way. But then you're opening up a big dark door, because then we have to go through the religion section here, where the church don't pay taxes and how much money they pull in.
Let me just say one thing to you. You know, you have to keep in mind that we have to look at some of the factors that they've talked about in Obamacare. And I'm the ranking Republican on the Senate Health Committee, so at least, and I work for a hospital system for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me share one thing to you. They use best practice as the Cleveland Clinic. And by the way, the Cleveland Clinic is a fabulous facility. No question about it. It's top drawer. But they don't tell you in that all the doctors that are in the Cleveland Clinic work for the Cleveland Clinic. They're not independent contractors. That is not the case in most hospitals throughout the country. And if you're going to use that as the best practice and say you're right, because they work for there, they don't order unnecessary tests, and they don't do things they don't do because they're working for that facility. They don't have an outside practice. But keep in mind, in every country that has gone to socialized medicine, and that's a form of socialized medicine, everyone working in the same system, anyone who has any money goes to a private practice doctor who's not in that system because they want better care. So even though that's the model that works so well here, if you do it nationwide, you tend to kind of socialize medicine. And keep in mind that this is the first time in the history of Harvard Medical School that they had openings, because now the brightest and the best are saying, do I really want to go into medicine? Spend all those years studying, rack up all that expense, and then be limited what I can make once I get out. So there's a consequence for some things we want to see that might be we don't get the same great health care we're getting today because we're not forcing the best and the brightest to go into medical.
That is true. On that note, we're going to get into health care. We'll get into Obamacare and everything. Today we have a couple people want to ask. We're running out of time.
I'm sorry.
And they want to ask the senator from New Jersey some questions, and also our Secretary of Defense, Nick Groff.
God, I keep getting these titles up. Jesus.
We got the First Lady of Brian and Hammer Jackson. So sorry on hold, and she's patiently being patient.
I am. I had a lot to say about everything that was said, but I let it, you know.
That's my liberal daughter.
I'm not so liberal. I actually think that I agree with a lot of everybody said, but I think that most of the time in this country, we are not taking things seriously enough. And I think that when something does happen here, everybody runs and all of a sudden it's the most important issue on the table. But like Nick said, we should be talking about these things all the time, not just when there's something that happens. And I seriously believe strongly that these incidences that do happen, and as traumatic as they are, that we make light of other things that are going on that can directly impact our country and the security of it. People just don't even realize and don't care because it's not really impacting me right now. Why should I even care about the topic? You know, things like Iran and terrorism. and Hagel being put into the position that he would be put into when I think very strongly he's not the right person for the job.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to get more to that in a little bit.
Bring in Hagel there?
I am, and we're getting to Hagel, and the chair recognizes the journalist from Los Angeles. I think he has a question for the senator. Hello, journalist. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Jackson?
I'm doing good, sir.
Fantastic. And seems to have a very high-minded and intelligent discussion going on. I want to say kudos to you and the panel.
Thank you.
Cheers.
We will remove you at this point. I'm only kidding. We just sometimes our sergeant at arms have nothing to do. I just say that just to get him excited. Go ahead, sir.
Well, the question, or I guess the statement that I would have is that, yes, when you mention that in other countries that have nationalized or universal health care, that those who can go to the private option. In as much as that may be the case, those countries also provide a better bare minimum of service to their citizens, as far as you don't have to lose your house because you get sick. You know, you don't have to move in with your parents because your child has a condition. These are things that the American for-profit healthcare system, this is the kind of stress that it puts the population under. And I think that the Obamacare thing, even though it's imperfect at this point, you have to give it some sort of curve to where the programs that are overlapping, right, are condensed or streamlined or what have you, but there has to be some sort of growing pains that the new law takes. For example, Social Security was supposed to be the end of the country when it was enacted by FDR. It was the right thing to do then. It assures our old people that there's a basic minimum that they can expect. Don't you think the American people have the right to a basic minimum of expectations when it comes to the healthcare system of the most technologically advanced and medically sound nation in the world?
Well, let me just say, first of all, you're right. It is a learning curve, and we have to wait to see. But let me just tell you, the reason why we're so concerned of it is they were requiring states to put together a health exchange. And if not, you could opt out of that and go to the federal government. But if you did your own, you couldn't get into the federal government one. The federal government hasn't set one up yet. Yet they have to have one right away. So now they're saying, well, we don't have one. So I think you're right. Had they gone into it a little slower and everyone understood all the ramifications, what people didn't understand is certain unions and certain companies opted out of it and were granted that. And some of the unions that supported Obamacare opted out of it. I think that you're right. Everyone should feel secure. No one should have to lose their house or find their child not getting medication. But unfortunately, healthcare, as you well know, is different from state to state. For example, in New Jersey, there are no state-run hospitals. They're all privately owned hospitals. Therefore, if anyone walks into any hospital in the state of New Jersey, you must be treated, period. You are not allowed to turn anyone away. And no matter what they need, you must treat them. That's not the case in many other states. In a lot of other states, they say, sorry, we're a private hospital. You've got to go down the road to the county hospital, or no, you're not treated. So you're right. There are some basic things that should be taken care of and done, and there should be these safety nets for everybody. I don't think that's of argument. I think some of the mandates and some of the consequences, there is no escape valve. In the case I gave you concerning our community colleges, why can't they provide a low-income health insurance for working people going to college that's affordable as opposed to the more expensive kind? Because that was never thought of when they designed the bill. So all I was saying is, because you rushed to do it, because you ran up the track to meet the train, you didn't wait to see everything and look through everything to do it. But you're, in essence, what you're saying is correct. Those other countries, that doesn't happen. The problem you have in these other countries, and let's take Canada, for example, is
Canada.
Are we willing to wait for health care? In other words, in Canada, if they're treating X amount of people for cancer that month, and let's say, just take a number, there's 40 people being transferred, and you're 41, you're not treated that month, you have to wait to the following month. Are we in this country willing to say, okay, we're going to wait our turn in line? And I don't know if we're willing to do that or not.
Isn't it already like that? Unless you're rich and you need a kidney? A rich guy can get his kidney a lot faster than a working class guy.
Well, I can't speak for every state. I know that the registry for stuff like that in this state, unless you've got a private donor, you're right. The wealthy will always find a way to do things. I'm not arguing with that. No, nobody's arguing that. But I'm saying to you, if you're on a registry, you're in line. But I think I'll tell you right now, if you're poor in this state and you need heart surgery, you get heart surgery. If you're poor in this state and need cancer treatment, you get cancer treatment. The answer is that is a mandate of our state. Part of the problem is the follow-up may not be there. You're right. No one is arguing that we don't want to see better health care for everyone. I agree with that. But there's also something called FQHCs. Are you familiar with them?
No, what's that?
Federally funded health clinics. And that was part of Obamacare. And what that did was the president said that we're going to fund more of them. There are thousands throughout the United States. FQHCs are clinics that get a higher reimbursement for Medicaid patients, and they're taking that higher reimbursement. For example, if you went to a doctor as a Medicaid patient, Medicaid would probably pay you $30 to see them. In an FQHC, they pay that FQHC anywhere from $130 to $150 to see that patient. That additional money is used to help the uninsured and underinsured, in many cases the undocumented. Those are throughout the country. And not only do they get that enhanced reimbursement, any doctor that works for an FQHC, a federally funded health clinic, the malpractice insurance is picked up by the federal government. And on top of that, they get a $650,000 kicker from the federal government each year as a bonus. And on top of that, they get grants to build buildings, to bring staff in. And on top of that, in many states, they get charity care. So there is a safety net for the poor. It's not a clinic. It's like a regular doctor's office, and they treat the poor and underserved of this country, and they serve people with dignity, and they serve the Medicaid population and anyone else that wants to use. So there is some type of safety net that is growing, and you should take a look at those, because those groups do a wonderful job. And throughout the country, in California, all throughout the country, they are called federally funded health clinics. They do an excellent job, and that's the way, by the way, the federal government serves the undocumented of this country.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Journalist, for the great question. The chair recognizes Wayne D., CEO, Come Get It Records. I think he has a question for the senator. Mr. Wayne D., CEO, Come Get It Records, how are you, sir?
Great, great. Good morning, good afternoon to some, and hope everybody has a blessed day. Great topic today.
Thank you.
To the senator, you know, from listening to him now and even in the past, you know, he seems like a great guy. I think that, you know, the system should also come up, you know, the United States should come up with a system almost like maybe like France or, you know, something like Germany, you know, where, you know, the French system, you know, it combines the private and public sectors, you know, to provide universal for everybody, you know. So, I think we should be more on the lines of, you know, getting a medical system, a medical care system that provides, you know, everything for everybody where, you know, a certain amount goes back to the people who can't afford it, like you were just mentioning.
Oh, I agree with you on that. The only thing I have to tell you is, if you really study some of these systems, and you have to, you know, you can take a whole day on this, but if you take a look at some of these systems, some of the systems, for example, let's take about a kidney transplant, it goes to the younger person, not the older person. You know what I'm saying to you? So we have to be willing to accept that, and that's something we have as a country have to understand, is that, for example, if you're waiting in line to get a kidney, and you're 55 years old, and I'm 30, I get priority at 30. You know what I'm trying to say to you?
Correct.
Are we willing to accept that?
Unless you're a millionaire.
Well, you know, we keep saying that. I'm not a millionaire. I don't think you're a millionaire. We fall under that category of average people. All I'm just trying to share with you is, you're right, the wealthy will always find a way to do it. Look, the number one insurance policy sold in England is a way to jump the line. In other words, you pay for it. Instead of being, if they're only doing 30 hip replacements, you can jump the line and be one of those 30. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the wealthy will always find a way to beat the system, and that's part of what money does. Money buys those things. But the masses have to be willing to accept certain things, and I don't know if we're willing to accept that in this country. I don't know if you're willing to be 50 or 65-year-old saying, I'm not getting that kidney first because the younger person is getting it. That now happens in other countries.
Now, is the United States just so over-compelled with medical stuff that, I mean, there's just so much going on and there's just so many loopholes. Well, how come we can't come up with a system such as the one in France or such one in the one in Italy or, you know, in Germany? You know, I think Germany's ranked
You know, I'll answer the question, why can't in Congress settle their own, put their nonsense aside and do the work of the people?
There you go.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Then that's the problem. You're 100% right. Why can't we find a better way? But that they can't get out of their own way.
Well, let me jump in for a sec here, though, because, I mean, to answer the question as to why we can't get this going, something people regularly kind of fail to recognize when it comes to national issues, especially ones that involve multi-million and multi-billion dollar industries, is that there is an incredible pressure from those who benefit from the inefficiency of the system and the way the system's structured now. They don't want any restructuring because they risk to lose a lot personally and institutionally. You know, we talk about Congress constantly going back and forth beyond, like, ideological and partisan divisions over whether or not we're of one country altogether or if we're just like this ramshackle collection of individuals all scrapping for our own. Beyond that, every single elected official at a federal level is not every single one, but almost every one of them is firmly in the pocket of some kind of interest. And that interest has this stick and carrot that they can use on them, saying, we have a position on this issue. It's very strong. We need you to play ball. If you don't play ball, well, then, you know, we won't give you the same support we did last time. We might even fund a primary challenger. If you win the primary, we'll make sure you go down in flames in the general.
So basically, you're saying we don't get things done because our elected officials have other agendas and favors
I wouldn't even call them agendas because that would sort of assume that these are positions and ideas that these people took on themselves. I think President Obama is a perfect example of this. But the thing is like, I'm of the belief that most people who get into government, outside of those few sociopaths who really just want to go in and pull strings and play favors for their buddies in the industry, I think the majority of them go in there with, for whatever merits they may be, very sound personal and political ideas that they want to see and they believe will help the country. Now, as they're going forward, they can have this broad scope agenda that encompasses everything that they think needs to be done to really fix this country and just make it as good as it can be. And along the way, the further they get to that office, the more they have to whittle that down and make compromises and say, okay, what do I value more? Do I want to reform healthcare? Do I want to, get there and change foreign relations or whatever? And now they've got all these interests coming in, and they need to weigh who it is that they can write off and who it is that they can run with and what they're willing to sacrifice to get other things done.
Okay, I understand. We're going to move this along really quickly because we're almost out of time, and I want to get to Hagel. I want to thank Senator, and you guys got to admit this. He came on not knowing what questions you're going to ask. He came on knowing that you can ask anything you want to, and he stood strong. He took the questions. He didn't have any buffer. He didn't have pre-questions. He didn't go to the journalists who love him. He stood strong. What do you guys think, huh?
Great. Excellent, Brian.
I appreciate your politician to share those things. You know, let me just say one thing. What we said about Washington and elected officials in general is so true. You know, you get elected, and then you have leadership. And if leadership says, this is the way we want you to vote, and you don't vote that way, they take away your chairmanship, they see you don't get this and that and everything, there's a consequence for a reaction. And I agree, 99% of the people that run for office do so for the right reasons. They want to make a change. They want to help people. It's the system itself that corrupts them down the road.
Right.
That's true. And on that note, we're going to move right along. But I want to recognize the gentleman from New Jersey. From New Jersey, Vinny, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, Brian. Hello, Senator. Hello, callers. I just wanted to call and remind you about my show today.
Well, that's a very important topic in the political world. Please do.
Okay, our show...
I'm kidding you. I love you, Betty. Go ahead.
Our show goes on at 4:30 Eastern Time, and today we'll be speaking about celebrity rehab and actually drugs plaguing my part of the country, which I'm sure is plaguing everybody.
Which is New Jersey.
That's New Jersey, and we're going to speak about that, and I hope your fans will tune in to my show, My Cousin Vinny, on Blog Talk Radio. The posts are all over the internet, and that's about it.
And well, I love you, Vinny. And Vinny, this is a senator from New Jersey.
Yeah, you know,
you talked to him before. You love him.
Yeah,
of course I love
Robert
him.
Robert Singer.
Yeah, oh, I know Robert's name quite well. Robert's on my list of good guys, and he's a good guy. He comes on your show. He'd take any calls. You could call his office. The guy's a straight-up guy.
He is. He represents Jersey well.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
He does. Oh, now we're going to switch really quick. And Vinny, don't forget, you guys, My Cousin Vinny is a great show. It's blowing up. You heard the subject he's going to be talking about. That's 1:30 Pacific Standard Time, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. My Cousin Vinny, you heard the subject. He's a true New Jersey guy. He Jersey justice. He tells it like it is. He talks about the headlines, the facts. And I love the guy. He's great. I'm a fan of his show. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator. Thank
Take
you,
care, Vinny.
Whoever's waiting there to talk. And thank you. The senator will take care of you. He will listen to your problems.
Yeah, he will.
And he will act on them. Believe me. I know from experience. Thank you very much, and I'll let you get on with your show.
Thank you, Vinny D. Bingo. Thank you, Vinny. Okay, guys, we're going to go really quickly. We're almost out of time, and I am not going to disappoint the First Lady of the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Here we go. We're going to switch gears. We could talk about health care for a long time.
Ever.
Anybody care about how we look in other countries? Do they hate us? You'll be surprised who love us and people who hate us. Anybody care? Okay.
Yes.
Of course.
First of all, we're going to talk about, everybody knows about Zero Dark. Is it Zero Dark 30 or Dark 40?
30.
I haven't seen 30. It.
Okay. Well, it's banned in Pakistan. And but the Pakistanians.
Are you surprised?
I kind of am. But the Pakistanians are also looking at it through bootlegging and internet, and they have some filmmakers who are making reviews on it. All of them are bad. They're very bad. One comment
said, "Have you seen the movie?"
I haven't seen the movie, and I love it. I mean, I love the trailer. I haven't seen it. I can't wait to see it. One person says the movie may be designed to embarrass Pakistan and its people and its military and its culture, or might be simply a victim of sloppy research. That was from a journalist in Pakistan. He believes the film's a goof. The Pakistanians sound like they're Indianized, whatever that is. Arabic speakers, they are not. They eat hummus. They say Pakistanians don't eat hummus, whatever hummus is.
It's hummus,
well, they don't eat humans.
It's eaten in Israel and in other parts of the Middle East.
Well, the story is correct. They do not eat humus.
Well, they're our enemies.
It's hummus, and it's made with chickpeas. So that's a definition.
I'm sorry. Hummus.
Hummus.
Okay. But what triggered more questions about the movie's message and the motive here was the country's major cinema players decided not to buy the film from the international distributors. Bottom line, they hate us. They said the film is stupid, and they said it's not accurate, and they think it's a joke. By the way, on a related note, they are making a film. I think it's Iran is making a film just like Zero Dark 30, telling you the accurate situation that actually happened. So they're currently in production now. So
you mean he's really with Elvis?
Are you
believing anything that comes from Iran? I don't understand.
It's coming to a theater near you.
Yeah, well, you know, Brian, you mentioned in Pakistan that, like, you know, Zero Dark 30 made it into the country via, like, pirate networks and such.
Uh-huh.
And I could tell you because, you know, as you know, like, I interviewed Brigida and I actually just interviewed Perkins. And the thing is that, you know, it's kind of like we were discussing before. There's a democratization of information and communication going on. The shit that officially comes out of Iran is going to be, you know, as slanted and bullshit as it can be.
But the thing is keep in mind that, like, the Iranian people themselves, especially the youth now, are growing up and, you know, more tech-savvy, more open-minded, more globally-minded than their leadership necessarily wants them to be, which is a lot of the internal strife there. So if you want to see, like, actual works that Iranians themselves, like, on-the-ground Iranians feel, in terms of, like, written works or even small productions when they can squeak them out and hide them, you know, you look to the pirate networks, because that's the only means they have of getting information out.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you brought up a scary point that the youth of Iran and Iraq and all the, even Pakistan, they are getting technically advanced here. We're going to, you know, we're having a problem with China right now, trying to hack in our secrets and blah, blah, blah. That's another story. But when we get these third world countries who don't really like us too well, and they're getting more
Iran
modernized.
Iran is not a third world country.
Who? Pakistan is not a third world country?
Iran's not a third world country, and I don't even know. But I mean, parts of Pakistan are definitely at the bottom of the socioeconomic chain. But the nation itself is far more sophisticated than, you know, sub-Saharan Africa or certain parts of South America.
Okay. Wow. True. I've been corrected by my Secretary of Defense, Mr. Nicholas Gruff.
He'd probably make a better Secretary of Defense.
I know.
So I'm wondering where the hell that one came from.
Election, it's Pakistanis, not Pakistanians.
Exactly.
Oh,
I've been corrected by this editor.
All no Pakistanis.
He will never bring foreign affairs up again after this show.
I'm going to go back to comics and rehab celebrities.
Are we still on Iran?
We can't be upset. You know, no one could be angry about anybody trying to get technically inclined. You know, it's what society brings. It's what the world has right now to offer. You know, it's there in front of us. We shouldn't be there to judge and worry about who's going to be more technically advanced. You know,
no,
I mean,
we
if that's,
should
if
worry.
That's, well, if that's
I,
the case,
we
then,
need to worry about the threats that can come to our country based on the fact that they're becoming more tech savvy, and I think that there's a lack of immediate response to this in this country of thinking that we are at risk, that there are outside forces and terror forces that are wanting to hurt our country, and they're going to infiltrate us through cyber terrorism.
Yeah, but let me share one thing that we have to keep in the back of our mind, and I agree we have to take a look at that, but understand one thing. As they become more tech savvy, as the people, as you saw, have more underground films and everyone has a cell phone that is a computer today, and else like that, they will come more to a better way of thinking. It happened in Russia. It will happen in North Korea. It will happen
happening
in Iran. They're going to see young people, and everybody wants a better life. You see the unrest in Egypt about people wanting freedom in a better way. I think that adds to our pluses. But I think going back to the concern of why Americans are not liked, part of it is jealousy. Part of it is the ugly American tourist per se is a factor into that. You know, we spend too much money, we rush off of boats and buy everything and rush back on boats. There's a whole syndrome of things that I think that we all look at, that why countries are jealous of us and else like that. Our standard of living is so much higher. You know, I don't think we understand poverty as much as, unless you've gone to some of these third world countries and see what real poverty is. I mean, you know, granted, we have poverty in this country. You can see plenty of it if you want to. But some of these other countries, poverty is beyond reason.
Exactly.
Becomes some jealousy of that.
That's true. I'm sorry, sir. On that note, we're running out of time, but you're absolutely right. And Nick has been removed, and he should be calling back in. But I don't have time to say who likes us or not, but let's just go with the overall. Are you guys want to hear the list of the most hated countries in the world?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Number 10, the most hated country in the world, Iraq. They made the list.
Wow.
Baghdad is one of the world's greatest cities now in ruins because of Iraq. Terrorism, I think violence, and complete disaster, and most of all, they're poor. They're rated number 10. Number 9, anybody guess? Okay, Russia.
John?
Russia made the list, number 9, most hated country in the world. Most European countries hate Russia, especially those countries that were in the Soviet Union. And so they hate them. Even today, they don't realize how much pain they created, not only to their neighboring nations, but even more to themselves. Number 8. Anyone want to guess?
France.
These would be Saudi Arabia.
Number eight, Pakistan. Is one of the Pakistan or Pakistan, depending on where you grew up.
Is that like tomato or tomato? Okay.
It's true. they are the most hated country. It says, I would like to just say, Kylie, stop hating U.S. and start hating our government. Our country is a hotspot for corruption, indeed. And they don't trust their government. That's Pakistan. Number seven, anybody?
Iran.
Afghanistan.
Iran. Iran is number seven, most hated country.
It's only number seven?
Only number seven, but you'd be surprised at number six. Iran is the most hated country. They made number seven. Some of my best friends are in university were Persians, and they were some of the coolest people around. But Iran, the country itself, needs big changes, and they talk about the government being corrupt. Number six. Anybody want to guess?
The U.S.
Yep.
Germany.
Yep. The number six hated country in the world is the United States.
I thought we'd be closer to one.
No, people hate the U.S. because we start wars, we eat too much food, buy the newest stuff, and care for only one religion, and they don't care about anybody else.
Yeah,
care for only one religion. What religion is that?
I don't know. Actually, it says here, somebody said not the worst country in the world, but definitely the most hated. Maybe if we start minding our own business, people would hate us less. Ron Paul. I don't know what's going on. I don't think Ron Paul said it, but okay. Number five, most hated country. Here we go.
North Korea.
Nope.
Israel.
Israel is number five, made it number five. People like Israel more than they like the U.S. Yay. Okay.
Why
are
they hated?
Exactly. Yeah. Think that they are the most noble race. Okay, here we go. All the races are pigs. And allowed to kill. Seriously, if you think that they are nice to you, it's just fake. They will stab you in the back. Okay. Number four. What happened to number? Okay, two, three. Okay, number four. Anybody?
Got to be China or North Korea. One of those.
Very good. North Korea, number four.
Germany.
I hate the government, but not the people. Dictatorship is corrupted. I feel bad for the people who have to live there. They have no knowledge of the outside world. Number three, most hated country in the world.
Germany.
There you
France.
Go, Senator. China.
Yeah.
China is a territorial thief. No wonder why everybody hates China. Arrogant country. Number two.
Who is making this list?
Number two, the most hated country in the world. South Korea. They're always trying to copy other countries' culture and claim that it is their culture. Many things from China and Japan were copied by them. They very easily get angry. Totally the worst Asians I know after China. I think North Korea is better than them. Okay, number one most hated country in the world. Anybody?
France.
Japan is the number one most hated country in the world. Japan is
obviously the person that made up this doesn't like sushi.
Or it's Chinese.
They said here, Japan is the most disgusting country ever. They keep denying the history and never regret what they have done. There is no future for this country that forgets its history. Okay, everybody, that was the list. Any comments?
It's expected.
It's expected.
There's no impact on anything, so let's move on to something better.
It has no impact. We don't care. You hate us. Get out of here. Let's move on to something else.
It just doesn't make sense, the whole list. So, you know, I'm just kind of like...
What do we have? Okay, we do have time. I guess we don't have time for the people who love us, right? We want to go right to the heat of the story?
Canada.
Bagel.
Yeah, it's a short
bagel.
List. People, the top 10 American-loving countries, the top 10 most who love us. Anybody want to guess who is number 10? We'll start with six. Number six, people who
Australia.
Love
Australia.
India.
Oh, India, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Many Americans don't realize that the extent of pro-American sentiment in India. They love us. Number seven. Somebody mentioned
number
it before.
Number five.
Number six.
Britain.
Am I going up? 7, 8, 9, 10?
Number 5.
I am going wrong. I'm sorry. I'll go really fast. Number 10 people who love us, England. They love us. They're number 10.
Oh, really?
They don't love us that much.
Oh,
number
that
9.
It'll be number 1.
Number 9 is Canada, who loves us.
Okay.
Became a number 9.
Oh, I thought they would have been number 1.
Nope, number 8.
The share of border would have been over.
Mexico.
Australia.
Mexico.
I thought they'd be number 1.
They're number 8. Number 7, Australia.
Where's
okay,
Switzerland?
Number 6, we just read, India. And let's see if we can go to the number 1. You'll be surprised, the number 1 country who really loves us. Let's see, here we go. Do we have it?
Saudi Arabia.
You're close, yeah. You're really close.
Dubai.
Come on, computer, load. Dubai. I don't know about that, but. Here we go. Number 5, Japan. They love us very much. Number 4, Poland. Despite decades of officials anti-American propaganda, Poland loves. Yeah, no joke.
No jokes. I'm part Polish.
Number
no
3, who loves us the most? Number 3. Anybody want to take a guess? Number 3, country that loves us.
France.
Nope. Israel.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, sure. They get enough money. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Israel came in number 3. I'm surprised they came in 3. I wish they were higher. Number 2, Kenya. Yay, black people. Number 2, Kenya loves us.
I would have thought Uganda.
Well you're really close.
Every year the Kenyans do.
And the number 1, I don't even know if it's a country, who loves us is the Ivory Coast.
Yeah, the Ivory Coast is a country.
It is? Okay. I got to go back to school. Let's talk about Israel, everybody. Here's what we're talking about. All right, so that's the poll there. So let's go to, ladies and gentlemen, Sari is with us today, and Sari had an experience. She wants to talk about Israel. We're going to talk about Hegel. If you guys don't know who Hegel is, Sari, in your opinion, can you describe us who this person is?
You want me to describe who he is?
Well, tell us about Hegel. I can tell you right now.
He is an individual with a clear misunderstanding
mm-hmm.
about what's going on in the world and the threats around us.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody who is within his framework of what he believes should be in charge of our military position in terms of, you know, the threats that we face and how to deal with them. And someone who's going to be the Secretary of Defense should be able to understand that, so we need to be ready for whatever can, God forbid, happen. And
okay.
I just don't think he gets that.
And that is our unbiased opinion. Here's what they say about Hegel. We'll put you up to date, and we're going to put Sari on him. President Obama nominated former Senator Chuck Hegel
Republican
as the next
Senator.
U.S. Secretary of Defense. Okay, this guy's a war hero. I don't know if he's a war hero.
Yes,
for those
is.
Who haven't followed
yes,
the Senate closely in the past decade, he's probably not a household name. Hegel is a former GOP senator from Nebraska, Purple Heart decorated veteran. We'll play that tape. He's a veteran. At age 21, Hegel and his brother Tom became the next in the family to serve in the United States Army. They joined the masses of Americans fighting an unfamiliar enemy in Vietnam. In his book, he describes finding himself pinned down by Viet Cong rifle fire, badly burned, with my wounded brother in my arms. Mr. Obama likes him very much. Mr. President, I'm grateful for this opportunity to serve our country again, Hegel said after Obama announced his nomination Monday. All right, we're going to go to tape, and then this is where we'll put the gavel on you guys if you get out of hand. I might have to test it. We're going to put the tape on, and then please comment after this. Let's start this, and you'll get a feel about. Here we go.
Today it was national security. He nominated former Senator Chuck Hegel for Secretary of Defense. Hegel, a man who volunteered for Vietnam, who was awarded 2 Purple Hearts for his courage. But tonight, he is already facing political fire. Why? ABC's chief global affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz tells us.
President Obama made clear today just how important this nomination is for the country.
My most solemn obligation is the security of the American people.
Through decades of war and peace, the job of defense secretary has had profound implications.
If force is to be used, Saddam Hussein would be removed from power.
Chuck Hagel knows the horrors of war firsthand. At 21, a poor kid from Nebraska, he volunteered to go to Vietnam, fighting side by side with his 19-year-old brother, Tom. He got two Purple Hearts, one when shrapnel ripped open his chest and his brother dragged him to safety, another a month later when Hagel himself on fire from a landmine rescued his brother.
I was on the left side where the major blast came up, and I was burned all up and down the left side of my body. So I grabbed Tom first, and he was out, and he had blood coming out of his ears and his nose, and you know, you don't have time to think about, is he dead or alive?
But critics are not focusing on Hagel's military service. While serving as a Republican senator, he angered some in his own party for not backing the troop surge in Iraq, not supporting unilateral sanctions against Iran, and what some on the Hill perceive as a lack of support for Israel.
Hagel's record is very, very troubling on the nation of Israel. He has not been a friend to Israel.
Hagel and the White House say these are misperceptions, with Hagel telling his hometown paper today he has unequivocal, total support for Israel. But he still has a lot of convincing to do on Capitol Hill.
Well, there you have it. Sorry, please take the phone.
Oh,
he has support. It said it right there, ABC News.
I think that if you look at his record on critical matters of national security, I think that you will find that some of the things that he's done in the past, including, you know, wanting to cut defense spending and minimizing the severity of the threats posed from Iran, I think those are reasons in alone. I don't care if you have – if you served in our country, I respect that, and I have the utmost respect for anybody who does that, but that does not necessarily make you the right person to be Secretary of Defense. You might have insight to it and understand it better than most. But if you think that we shouldn't worry about the threats that are around us, that makes me concerned as what's going to happen when something does happen. How are you going to react towards it?
And is it the threats that you worry about, sorry, or are you more concerned about the lack of support with Israel and his beliefs?
I think that some of the comments that have come out of his mouth are really ignorant. When it comes to Israel, I think that...
Can I take this one?
Oh, no, wait. Let her talk, and you got it. Mr. Journalist.
I
will use my gavel.
I got first dibs on this one.
Oh, no.
Okay, at this time, have security, surround, sorry, that's it. Okay, please proceed.
I just, you know, from some of the things that he said... I just really think that, you know, he doesn't have the best interest. If our closest ally in that region he's having problems with and he does not stand by, as I think we should be standing by, the one democratic country in that region. I mean, if you talk about things with women's rights and gays and you go across the board, Israel is the place where people are allowed to have freedom and have democratic, you know, involvement, whereas in the other countries that's not the same thing. And I just really feel strongly that I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat that he puts in that position as Secretary of Defense. I want somebody that really has this country's best interest in securing us and our safety. And I think that we live in a very false sense of security in this country and thinking that nothing is going to happen. And I don't believe that. Things what's going on in the EU right now, not recognizing Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, are they crazy? I mean, you have to put it where it is. And if we're going to minimize the threats of terror and of Iran and Ahmadinejad, and we're going to really minimize that, we're putting our own country and our own people at risk. And how can you want somebody in that position that doesn't take any of that seriously?
Okay. Granted, I listened to her. I recognize the gentleman who is a journalist. Care to respond under 1 minute, please?
Okay, where do we begin? First,
your minute's up. Now we go next. Moni, kidding. Go
first
ahead, Mr. Journalist.
United States military. Let's start there. Do you know how much the United States spends on its military, ma'am, miss?
It's sorry.
You're
sorry.
Asking me, no, I don't have to spend the military a lot.
Do you know? Do you know how much? The United States spends more than the next 13 countries combined on defense. To say
what does that have to do with,
so you believe
with Hagel
that
being confirmed? Now, remember, Hagel only lost by 2 votes. What is, and that was from the Republicans. I don't know what's going on there. It's okay. We're running out of time, and I understand
that's
what you're saying. With can you get to the point, Mr. Journalist? Because we only got 10 minutes, and we're going to do a roundtable.
The point is that sorry is very misinformed when it comes to the actual X's and O's of the U.S. military situation. The only people that the U.S. military is building the aircraft carriers and the planes and the bombs to fight is Optimus Prime and the Transformers, because nothing else in the world can stand up to the U.S. military now. You're fighting an enemy that doesn't exist, and that's a problem.
Enemy that doesn't exist.
Am I next on this on the list?
Which enemy that doesn't exist exactly?
Iran. Is
are
an
you
enemy
kidding?
That doesn't exist. You're
are
not
you
going to wake up in the morning and see Iranians. Ain't going to happen.
The chair recognizes
why
there's a
this
fight.
This is going to be in trouble.
Well,
can I say?
Must have order. The great senator has something.
Okay,
now,
just,
we left off with you, Mr.
Things.
Journalist,
first
when
all,
you say
on
enemy that does not exist.
Thank you.
Mr. Senator just took off
his
jacket and he climbed up over the bench. Yes,
right.
Mr. Senator.
That's true. There's two quick things I want to say. Look, let's not underestimate terrorism and where it's at. Look at the World Trade Center. That tells you that any country at any time can do things that we thought they couldn't do. But I think the more important thing about it is you're confirming the Secretary of Defense. I want the brightest and the best. And I don't know if this man is going to be confirmed or not, and I'm not certainly maligning his military record's outstanding, and I'm not maligning him in general. But I don't think he's the brightest and the best. And I really think that we have to seek that out, and we should at these times. In these tough economic times, these tough world times, we should want the brightest and the best. And I don't think this guy's the brightest and the best.
Okay.
Wait, Dad, do you think Iran is a threat to us?
Go ahead. You have two minutes.
Is Iran a threat to us?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Is Iran a threat to us?
There's no question Iran is a threat to us. We're looking at a country that might have a nuclear
bomb.
Let's understand just one thing, and I'm certainly not an expert in this, but keep in mind one thing. The only country in the Middle East that has the bomb right now is Israel. And because Israel has had the bomb, it survived. And very honestly, it's kept the balance in that.
Wait a minute, I thought Iran had the bomb, too.
No, they're working
on it. If Iran has the bomb, we don't know if they have the bomb yet. But I'm saying to you is once another country that is not a democracy has a bomb, you change the whole level of what's going on in the Middle East.
Okay.
That's
the
concern.
Pakistan has had the bomb since the 90s. What about Pakistan? What about India? The bomb is already there. Okay? The Russians got the bomb. The bomb is already there. Let's be real. They got bombs in Turkey. The bomb is here. That's not what the point is. The point is who has access to it. And let's get on a real topic. I submit to you, Senator, that more Americans are killed by police each year than
by Iranians. Okay, that's another topic, though. Right. We only got 5 minutes. That's another topic. The journalist, please, will you please
put down the gavel?
I'll lay down my gavel on you, sir.
I am Iranian.
It's overtime.
Sir, I demand. Bayless?
You might have to take a crack,
You know, Brian, all I got to say is,
this is scary to me. This is scary.
Yes, I recognize the gentleman from Sacramento who passed the marijuana law.
Brian, this is Wayne Dean, CEO, Come Get It Records. And I believe in this. I'm not too familiar with the whole political scene. I do have common sense, though. And I will say this. We need more people like Mr. Singer to represent people as us as a nation. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you could tell by the way his daughter speaks and the values he has in life and other people in general. And I think with more people like him you know, like he had mentioned just a while ago, you know, you want a good set of people on the team, you know, and when you have a couple bad apples that are screwing things up, making decisions incorrectly, then you're going to have problems. But if you have a strong, solid team with more people like him, I think this country would be in great shape.
Hear, hear. We will vote for that later in chambers. Okay. We only got 4 more minutes left. Ms. Sari, I'm going to give you another 1 minute to state your case why there is a threat to us in the Middle East.
Do I really even have to say more?
Well, I guess apparently you do, because Mr. Journalist is now signing a petition to have you banned from Congress.
I'll be happy to be banned from anything political.
No, let me share just one thought with anyone that concerns about the Middle East that they should realize. And I think keep in mind is Israel is the only true democracy there. If you look at what's going on in Syria, innocent people being killed and murdered. If you look what's going on in Egypt, where the masses are now uprising against the governing party right now because they're concerned about what's happening in Egypt and not being a democracy. If you look what's going on in Jordan, which is a dictatorship. If you look what's going on around that entire area, Israel is the one bright light that happens to be a democracy that is similar to that thinking of that of the United States. And if you don't support a democracy that allows people freedom of choice, that allows people to of all parties to come together and of all races to come together, then we fail our basic instinct as Americans that we want to support democracy around the world and we want to help countries and people be free.
That's true. That's from the senator.
Nonsense. Ask that to Palestinians. They treat them Palestinians like shit. They can't get no jobs. They can't move around freely. They're walled off in their own city that they've been there for 3,000 years. Come on, stop with the Israeli hypocrisy.
I didn't know they've been there for 3,000 years.
It's hypocritical. Them Israelis treat them Palestinians.
If we want to have a discussion sometime, we really should look at, because if you understand about the Palestinians, you'll understand that every Arab country threw them out.
Yes.
There you go.
And understand it suffices the needs of terrorism to keep the Palestinians poor and angry. There are political reasons for those kind of things. Keep in mind about one thing, that Arabs that live in Israel are full citizens. There are Arabs that are a member of the military. You know, if you take a look at the way Israel treats everyone as a sovereign nation does, they treat them the same as American citizens treat everyone here. Now, granted, there's discrimination every place in the world. There's discrimination here. But if you take a look at Israel, Arabs are not discriminated that live in Israel. The problem is that the Palestinian motto is destroy Israel. What do you do with a group of people that want to destroy your country?
There you go. On that note, hold on, everybody. We're going to go into archives in about probably a minute. And here's what that means. Most of our audience look at our archives like their lives. So we're going to continue this conversation a little bit longer in archives so we can get the whole information of everybody's site. So it doesn't mean anything. But while we're still live, I want to thank the great senator from New Jersey, Mr. Senator Robert Singer. I love the man. I want to thank Sari. I love Sari. I want to thank Wayne D. CEO, the journalist. I want to thank Nick Gruff. I love the guy, and I love you too, Wayne. A lot of love. I want to thank everybody, Vinny, everybody for participating in this discussion. We're going into archives right now, which doesn't mean anything. It means we're live to them, and we get crazy people listening. This conversation is going out on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, everywhere. We have another social media group called Blip TV. It's going there on the AEN Network. A lot of people are going to listen to this discussion. So I want to thank you, and let's continue our discussion. Right now, I will give it to Sari, because she does have a point here. She is my guest, and please listen to her, and then you may respond. Sari, you have the
point. No, Dad, you can continue. I don't say anything. He's doing a great job.
Okay, now, Sari had her word. Thank you very much for that very important message.
Right.
Yes, Senator, please, you have a point.
Well, part of an understanding, you know, if people have the opportunity to travel to Israel, they really should. It really broadens their horizon on the issues going there. There is no question about it that Israel is a very small country that lives in fear. And if you've been to Israel, you'll see how close the borders are. But keep in mind about things. When we talk about Israel, we talk, for example, before Israel took over all of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was a split city, half was Arab and half was Jewish, the Jerusalem was not an open city. All religions were not allowed to practice there. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to go to the Wailing Wall, you couldn't because they built homes all the way up to the Wailing Wall. In the 67 war, when everything was recaptured back, you know what Israel did? They didn't go there and bulldoze all the Arab homes that were by the wall. They went and bought them. And then they made it accessible to everyone, anyone who wanted to go there. You have the Dome of the Rock, which is the second most religious part to the Muslim world, which is right above the Wailing Wall, which is total access to everyone. You know, you have the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which five different religions chooses as a very important religious place that's open to anyone to go there. I mean, the walled city is an open city to all to pray, to use, and that things. That's the thinking of Israel. If you take a look at the history, I was involved when they did the work of bringing the Ethiopian Jews out of Ethiopia. That was the black Jews. And Ethiopia was torturing these people because they had, against their religion, they were against the Jewish religion there. And Israel paid money to Ethiopia to allow to bring these people to Israel. They are part of the lost tribe. And, you know, and I was part of that operation at the time, and they settled in Beersheba, and they worked with that culture to bring them into the Jewish culture. And by the way, the kind of things they did in Israel with other countries to do is they passed a law saying that the Ethiopians could not be domestic help. They didn't want to create a subservient class of anything, and they serve in the military and they're full citizens and everything else like that. I mean, Israel goes that extra step that other countries don't even do. And if you take a look, wherever the Jewish community needs them, no matter what country they are, they're the first ones to say, we help you. So I think in a positive way, there are a lot of positive things about Israel you have to look about, surrounded in a world of Arab people that want to eliminate them. Think about what Iran says. They want to eliminate Israel. They want to kill Israel. Talk about what you talk about in Egypt, the groups there that want to kill Israel. What else does a country do when everyone wants to kill them?
True. Yeah. That's a powerful statement. Anybody else want to talk about that?
Yeah, I do.
Yes. Okay, Mr. Journalist, you got the floor.
And the United States gives Israel more money than it gives any other nation, as does Britain. It creates an environment of antagonism and hostility, nothing against the Jewish people. They deserve a homeland, and they deserve a place to enjoy sunshine and blue sky, just like everybody else. Do I think that it's cool what the Iranians said and what the Syrians and the Egyptians did back in the 70s and whatnot? No. But ever since Carter bought off Egypt back in the 70s, that situation's been pretty cool, aside from a few rockets, harassment, what have you. No one thinks Iran is going to invade Israel. No one
really?
Thinks it's going to invade Israel.
Okay, let's leave you on that note. Wow. Sorry, what do you think about that? The journalist says nobody thinks Iran is going to invade Israel.
It bothers me how ignorant we Americans are. I mean, my organization, we work directly with other organizations in Europe that work with victims of terrorism in Ireland, in France, in Spain. We have connections in Algeria, in Italy, and nobody that in those areas believe what you just said. So if you're thinking that, and that's probably the attitude of a lot of Americans, then we perpetuate this idea of, if it doesn't happen to me, it's not my problem. I don't have to worry about it because it's not really a worry. Only when something happens do we blow up the country in terms of, like, what we have to do to fix it. So the same thing. We don't have to worry about gun laws until someone comes and goes into a school again and shoots everybody, because it's not happening right now. We have to worry about things in advance. We have to worry about the global impact of terrorism and take it more seriously. And I think that's our biggest problem in this country, is we don't take it seriously enough. And I think that people would be surprised to hear that you talk about, the Palestinians. Well, there's a difference between the Palestinians in Gaza who have voted in a known terrorist organization, Hamas, who is their government, and And you're saying that they're left to be the way they are. Well, their government leaves them in poverty and uses them as human shields in order to accomplish something that they think they're going to get by political means. And in the end, there are these innocent people that are being blown up. Okay,
no,
so let me just
tack on to one thing Sari is saying to understand one thing. Where the money and the arms come from a lot of these terrorist groups are Iran. They foster terrorism. Think about a world, and you know, we're all people of goodwill. Think about a world that, and I heard this statement when I was in Israel, so true. Think about how proud these terrorist mothers must be that their children grow up to be bombers and kill themselves. What a sick world that is. That is the ultimate thing, that your child grow up to be a terrorist bomber and kill themselves.
But
and
is
that
fair,
is fostered
Senator,
by
though?
This.
But is that a fair statement? Because the reason they're blowing themselves up is because of their belief regarding their God and their country. We can go back to 1945, 47, when we had kamikaze pilots who also will do suicidal missions in the name of their mother or their country. So is it fair to say they're blowing themselves up for no reason at all and they're just a killing machine?
Well, I'm confused about any religion that tells the positive thing for your child to go and blow themselves up. I can't fathom that one. Maybe it's beyond my capability.
There's no justification for it. There's no justification. And just to tell you, the kid who strapped explosives to himself and blew himself up on my bus was 18 years old. He was the eighth kid that was brainwashed that year to carry out attacks for Hamas. And the truth is that, you know, there's those children who are being indoctrinated, that is against their rights. That is against human rights for those children to be indoctrinated, and that's what people should be focusing on in the international realm, of how dare the terrorists take innocent children and indoctrinate them and use them to carry out.
Let me ask you a question, sorry. Again, I have to play devil's advocate. You know this.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question. Is that any different than the American soldier saying, "I will die for this country"? For when
an,
you,
when an American
you,
soldier who's, who's,
when,
who's
well, what I'm trying to say, I know it's a reach, and I'll try to explain it. As
Army.
An American, forget it, even an American soldier, an American, that they will say, they'll be the first one to say, "I will die for this country." Whatever diplomatic lines or war we're at, we're going in. We're Americans. We don't know the politics of this, or whether it's we're going in for fighting mass missiles of destruction. We don't know if there's any out there. We're going to go in and we're going to kill, and because we are Americans and we will die for this country. Is it the same way? Is it the same thing, or am I out of line here?
I just think it's very different.
Killed a million Iraqis. We killed a million Iraqis. That's what he's saying.
I understand what he's saying. I do understand what he's saying, but what I'm trying to talk about is the idea of innocent children being indoctrinated. And I'm not talking about an 18-year-old kid. I'm talking about 11 years old, 10 years old. I'm talking about children going to camps where they're being taught that the ultimate thing for them to do is to be a martyr. But that's the ultimate respect for them.
I agree.
Enjoying their childhood.
But
they're
also saying
games.
That if you're impoverished, if you're poor and you have poverty, this is the way that we will take care
no,
of your family.
So
is this anything going
okay
on that this is the way we'll take care of your family and
but
they will have riches and
poor,
for sacrificing?
Okay
is that going on too
people?
Behind the scenes?
But I don't understand. If you're poor, it's okay to murder people.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that a lot of these terrorist organizations, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these terrorist organizations will go into the poorest communities,
yes.
And people don't. These are poor country, and they would say, if you do this, and if you do this for the good of your country, and for Allah, whatever, and when you do leave this earth, not only will you get a lot of virgins up there, but we will take care of your family, and they will have riches
that is
and wealth.
Probably a lot
is
of the
is
motive,
that what's going on?
That's probably a lot of the motive for those that understand and comprehend that, but not for a child. And the
exactly.
truth of the matter is that the bus driver on my bus is Arab-Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look at a bus and say, "Oh, there are no Arabs on the bus. I'm going to blow it up." It doesn't discriminate, and he was injured pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are. I think people don't realize that in Israel there are Arab Israelis. There are Arabs who are a part of the government.
That is true.
You have to separate between the two and see what's going on in that, that the Palestinians are in a perpetual place of poverty and of distress because their government, for all this time, going all the way back to Arafat, left them like this. I mean, do you know where all the aid when Arafat was there, where all that money went to? It didn't go to help the people, to give them things, to make their lives better. It went, it's now with his widow somewhere in France because that's where it was given. I mean, you have to put into perspective in terms of, and I want to make one comment when you talk about poor people. You know, some of these terrorists are not poor. They're well-educated. There was a there's a female suicide bomber, if I'm not mistaken, who blew herself up in 2002 in January in Jerusalem, who was a lawyer. So you talk about this idea of them not being educated. It's not the case in every part of there. There are educated Palestinians who are blowing themselves up. And I think the problem is that we hear what's in the media, we hear what's on the news, we hear the slants on things, and we automatically believe that that's what's going on there, and we don't educate. And I, when I speak on college campuses, I talk about this a lot. Educate yourself to know
exactly
what's really going on. Read. Joseph Farah is a Palestinian journalist who will tell you, and he's written it, and it is straight as could be, that there is no reason why the Palestinians have any claim to the old city, to Jerusalem, that Muhammad never went there. And again, I'm not well versed in any of this, but when I read his articles, I had a better understanding of the background of the Palestinian people and what was really going on. You need to educate and read things. I mean, there's a great book that I happen to have gotten a lot out of, Son of Hamas. It is written by the son of one of the founding members of Hamas. You'll be amazed at what he discusses. And by the way, he's in this country because he, if he would go back to the Middle East upon putting one foot out on land, he'd be dead.
Some Americans believe that Al Jazeera, I can't pronounce it, please.
Al Jazeera?
News. The news organization.
Yeah.
Some Americans believe that is the real news. They think that the USA, the network news are biased. You have your Fox, you have your MSNBC, you have your
CNN. We don't see a lot of things here that you get over in Europe. And in Israel, I would see things in the news because they get a lot of the European, Sky News and Asia. We are sheltered from a lot of what's going on in the world.
But how do you feel about that?
I think the BBC probably gives the best news of anybody.
I'm sorry?
The BBC probably gives the best news of everybody.
I was going to mention the BBC, too. But is the BBC slanted, though? Are they kind of biased, too?
Everyone is slanted. Look, you said before in your conversations that the Hannity, the Riley factor, you're right, they're slanted to the right, and you have CBS and NBC and CNN slanted to the left. There's always that. That's a shame. We it's tough for us to really get, and that's where we lose out, the real truth of things. I don't want to hear, again, and I would say as a Republican, if a Republican does something, it's terrible, it's beyond belief. If a Democrat does something, it becomes page five. I mean, it, unfortunately, that's the way it is, unless it blows up beyond reason. But going back to what we're talking about, education is the key to helping people. And if you realize why Egypt had done the best, because it was the most educated population in that area of the world, and they were at peace with Israel for how many years? And they stopped the fighting. The advantage to terrorism is if you keep people poor and uneducated, they make great terrorists. And let me share one thing to you. Terrorists are indiscriminate. If you take a look at Americans as such, we don't target to kill women and children and innocent bystanders. Terrorists kill anybody. These are not military targets. When you walk onto that bus where my daughter was on, this wasn't a military target. These were grandmothers and grandparents coming home from a school. These were students. These were people coming home from work. They weren't army people. That's the entire difference. You say to yourself, once in a while, a rocket. You don't want to live in Israel where they have hundreds of rockets in the course of a month coming over and killing people and damaging things and have to know that your children have to know what a shelter is. Think about little children having to know have to run to a shelter all the time.
15 seconds to run to
safety. You really have to understand. If you want to understand the fear of Lakewood of Israel, and Lakewood is very close to Israel because we go back and forth a lot because of the large Jewish population, go to the Golan Heights. and understand what it took Israel to take the Golan Heights during the war and why they can't give back the Golan Heights. It's a very, very small country. Think about one other thing. Israel is the fruit basket for Europe during the winter.
Yeah,
they took the
yeah.
desert and made it into flourishing. They are the second largest flower growing country in the world outside of Holland.
Yeah.
And they're willing to transport that to other worlds to help other countries learn about that, the drip system, things like that. It's a very technologically born country that wants to help their neighbors.
Well, you know, it's like you just said, it starts with when you have a bunch of kids being coerced, you know, basically just being duped into being terrorists. It all starts with what you just said, education. Education,
absolutely.
You know, it, no matter where they're at, it's not really education of history or his story. It's just the education of knowing what's really going on, and that's a very big importance in a lot of societies. It should be important on all societies, you know, that people should be get educated and learn what's going on. Now, when you have the kids being duped in to being terrorists, it's almost like the same level. It's not the same level, but it's almost like the same incentive as the reporters here, the left and right. You know, they're making you believe one way. You know, and so it's almost a fairy tale to trick you into. It's trickery. You know, and I don't think no one should believe in that. I don't. You know, but the foremost important thing is it all boils down to being educated. You know, and in these places that are in these countries, they're scared of some of their kids being educated. You know, because they know that their kids are going to see the truth. You know, they're going to define what's correct and what's wrong. You know, so it's just a matter of time. Now, the whole situation is it's probably not going to happen, at least in our lifetime. It's going to take a lot of weeding out.
Okay. You know, we're at the point now where I know the great senator of New Jersey has to leave, and sorry is probably going to need a nap. But, because you're wrong.
She's my oldest daughter, not my youngest.
When she gets going, I know. So the question is this: I'm going to ask. A lot of people have been dropped. Blog Talk has done it. It's not me. I'm so sorry. Sometimes when we get a lot of activity on one channel, people get dropped. The journalist got dropped. But we do have a couple of people left. We'll do a roundtable question. I'll start with Jeffrey. Jeffrey, if you can open up your mic, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Jeffrey Bertrand. I'm going to ask the question, a roundtable question, and give us from your heart. Be nice. If you can't be nice, be cordial. Here we go. The question is this. Is Israel under a threat? Jeffrey.
Yeah. In a way, but you know what? They shouldn't have taken the land.
Okay. Now, I'm going to follow up with that question. Should we
I don't understand the answer. What do you mean they shouldn't have taken the land?
Well, we'll go with you. Sorry.
Now, education again. British mandate. Look at the history.
I know. It's
British mandate.
Yes, you are. You're going to get a really good chance here in a minute. My follow-up question is, should the USA, Jeffrey, put Israel as the number one country that we should put all of our forces in to protect?
Oh, hell no. We already have been giving them way too much money.
Oh, hell yes. When they're done with Israel, they're coming for us. Holy
oh,
hell.
Yeah. Israel's coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Is Iran?
No.
Oh, my God. No. They're they're the size of Ventura County, and we are how many millions of square miles? All it takes is one plane. Done deal.
Okay. Wayne, DCEO, same question to you, sir. Is Israel under a big, heavy threat?
You know what I think they are. When you have the kids, you know, being constantly scared, you know, bomb threats, you know, missiles over their head in the morning, you know, just all types of stuff that go on that, like, like a lot of people, I believe the senator mentioned, and that was, you know, a lot of stuff we don't know. You know, there's a lot of stuff we don't see, a lot of stuff we don't know, just like in your local news. There might be something that happened down the block, and you expect it to be on the news, but it didn't make anywhere.
Should we put all of our attention and what's going on with the Middle East and Syria and the uprising, what's going on, and the threats about we want to, you know, eliminate Israel, the face of the planet and everything? Is this a serious threat that the United States should be looking at and putting all of our resources and our protection towards Israel, make them a forefront of what's going on?
I don't know if it should be our 100%, I mean, to all our attention. We got enough problems here as it is. But, you know, if it's going to affect down the line and create a domino effect where, you know, hey, that in case something does happen there, you know, it's going to come over here, then, yeah, it should be definitely looked at. We got to keep in mind, you know, Israel's smart. You know, if I remember correctly, I believe a lot of the pilots, you know, in the U.S. were trained by Israelis, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be addressed, a lot of things that need to be looked at. Now, do I feel that we should put our 100%? I don't know. It's only if it affects that it's going to affect us in the long run. Yeah, I think it's worth looking at. You know, it's like Jeff just said, it's a small place, but at the same time, this small place is very powerful, and that's what people don't understand.
Now,
people
are you afraid? And one more thing, Mr. Wayne, DCEO, come get a record. What happens in Israel will stay in Israel. It will not affect the United States whatsoever, no matter what happens with them. Do you believe that? As far as
no.
terrorism, threats,
economic
tensions.
I don't believe in everything that happens there is going to stay there. No, you know, there's a reaction for every action. Simple as that.
Does Israel have the right to protect themselves without asking the United States or dealing with the United States pressure? Do they? Should we untie Israel's hands?
I think any country should, if it's fit to be correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wade, DCO. Jeff, one more thing, and I'm going to go to Sari and this great senator. Same question. Does Israel have the right to protect themselves without having to deal with the United States foreign policies?
Well, you see, that's the problem there. Protect them, but, foreign policy, dude, you're going to piss off a lot of people.
Well, but they have the right to protect themselves, even though we have other interests in the Middle East that can cause a problem.
And the Middle East, most of the countries already hate us as it is, as far as I know.
Okay. Now, do you think what happens in Israel stays in Israel, or can it fall out to us?
Absolutely not, because we got way too much invested in that country and protecting them since, the 50s, 60s?
So you don't consider Israel as a frontline country before it comes to us. So what happens in Israel stays in Israel, right?
I don't see the Israelis coming over here and doing anything that can't. Okay, the big difference between military action and terrorists, different story.
Okay.
Big time, different story. You're going to get terrorists all over the world and whatnot. As far as a military threat, if they piss off enough of the Middle East, here comes North Korea.
Okay. Now, do you think that we should put a focus on Israel, protect Israel, knowing that the trouble, the unrest in the Middle East, and it's getting close now? Do you think the United States should put more resources into Israel as far as promise to protect Israel with everything we got? We pledged to Israel. Is that the right thing for the USA to do?
I can't say it's the right. I can't say it's the wrong. I just want to know what day made the USA the world police.
Well, I think as soon as Russia fell, we took the democracy to another level as a police nation, and we have a lot of interest in the Middle East, and we have a lot of interest all over the world, and we do promote democracy. But I understand your question, bro, and now I'm going to turn to Sari. Sari, there you go. You got Would you like to comment on anything that's been said so far?
I mean, I think that we don't have to turn every single point of our, you know, what we do towards Israel, but I do believe that we have to be realistic in standing and supporting them in what mm-hmm. needs to be done, and that if something's going to happen, that we are there side by side with the democracy that is in that area.
Do you feel that the USA is supporting Israel, sorry? Or you feel it's kind of like, okay, guys, just settle down. We'll take care of it.
I don't think on the whole. I think that the administration is not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you have, and I didn't this up, but because you brought up in terms of our country. I mean, Hegel, you know, when he was, you know, talking before that congressional confirmation hearing where he said, when they brought up about the fact that he claimed that the Jewish lobby intimidates people on the Hill, I think that's absurd, because then you could talk about organizations like CARE, you know, that do the same thing.
Do you ever think there'll be peace in the Middle East? Sorry.
I believe that as I said, education to me is key.
True.
I think when the next generation is educated not to hate.
I like that answer. Senator, I don't know if the senator is still here.
I'm still here.
You have heard some of the voices of people today, whether you agree or not agree. You heard Jeffrey Bertrand and his voice and Mr. Wayne, DCEO. How do you feel, sir?
Keep in mind is we spend a lot of money throughout the world. We're in South Korea. We're in Japan. We have bases in Germany and Italy. We have bases in Saudi Arabia. And we spend a lot of money. Israel is our number one ally in the Middle East. You know, think about how much information they have helped us with understanding the problems facing those other countries there and threats to these other countries. They've been a great ally that way, and we have to protect our allies. And I think if we didn't stand strong for Israel, the rest of the world would absolutely look and say, you can't trust the United States. So it is for our own well-being that we show that not only is it our greatest ally there, that we take care of our friends. And that's an important aspect for the respect of the world. I mean, are we seeing the fact is, without an Israel, what would happen? God knows what.
I agree.
I think that's an important aspect. And I think we have to understand, and Sari really said it best, we're hoping that future generations will learn from the mistakes of the past, that there will be peace and that people can live together. The problem is that whenever you're dealing with zealot groups, no matter what side they're on, and you, it's very, very difficult. And we're seeing that in these zealot groups that promulgate hate and domination and everything else like that. And unless people are realize that and understand that what they're dealing with, there won't be a change. So I think we're all hoping for a change, but again, the United States cannot turn its back on Israel. That would be a major mistake, not just for Israel, but for the United States.
I agree, and for what it's worth, I think the next 4 years and the next election will be a Republican president. I think the new Republican is coming out. The new Republican is sorry. I think the Republicans are tired of seeing this nonsense like the Tea Party and the Libertarians. They have nowhere to go, so the Republicans say, hey, come over here, and they look like idiots. I think the Republicans are tired of that BS. They used to be the moral party, family values. They used to be all that. And lately, you know, with scandals, when they start letting in nutcases into their party, things happen. Michelle Bachmann, the pizza guy. They even had a guy in there saying, I can't pay the rent, and the rent's too damn high, party. Come on.
You know. Let me say one thing to you. You know, first of all, just one last thought. And you know, you mentioned Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann is entitled to her opinion, and that's the great part about this country. Because we disagree with something doesn't mean they're a nut. Because we disagree with something doesn't mean they're a bad person. We have the right to disagree, and I like that in our party. I parties have to be made up of a cross section. We don't want yes sir people, and I think that's part of our problem. When we disagree with somebody, whether it's with the president or this and that, we classify him as a nut. We classify him as out of step. That's wrong.
I understand, Senator.
Everybody in this phone are people of goodwill. As I said
I understand.
To you,
I understand, and that's great in a perfect world, but we're talking about the leader. I think the Republican Party is going to step up in 4 years. I'm saying good things about the Republican Party.
I know that, and let me say one thing to you. The keep in mind about something. Sometime we should have the discussion is, you know, I've dealt with and worked with a lot of anti-poverty programs that work with the poor. And you know something? These programs promulgate being poor. And we have to start to change our thinking that way, too. We have incentives to remain poor. And you got to think about that. We should talk about that because that's a true factor. There are incentives to remain poor.
I agree with you 100%, and I can go, oh,
and there
boy,
are political reasons why parties want to keep people poor. Because
exactly.
They keep their vote.
Poor and ignorant. But
exactly right. Exactly
what
right.
What I'm saying is that, and here's what I'm saying, and I'm a Democrat, but here's what I'm looking at the Republican Party. I'm looking at them very carefully. They're taking little steps. One of it is McCain. You just got to keep watching the Republican Party. They're making the right moves. The Republican Party did not lose because of social issues or because of anything else. If you look who voted for the Democrats, which is the women, and the Republican Party got a lot of women on their side this time. They're coming up there, but the minorities came through, the Mexican-Americans came through, the social issues.
Because they were scared, and I think they came through because they were scared.
They were scared, but they were getting a lot of mixed messages in the Republic. Would you say this is correct, Senator?
It is correct. There absolutely is correct. There has to be a path to citizenship. There's no question about it.
Exactly. So, you Democrats, I am a Democrat, but I'm going to tell you something. The next election will be a Republican president, and I got a feeling we need one. I'm saying this as a Democrat, and the reason why is just government is just taking over. Anything we do.
As long as it's not
control.
Ron Paul, I'm in favor of that.
Me too.
I'm sorry. But it's just too much government. It's just too much government in our business. We can't breathe. And I'm for less government. And if Colin Powell ever ran, I would have been the first one to jump to Republican. I would even, I'll tell you who, what's her name, with the guy with the hand, Dole. If Mrs. Dole ran, I can't remember her name. She
Elizabeth.
Dole. I would have probably voted Republican. The problem that is killing the Republican Party, in my opinion, is the social values and the issues. And when you become, we're a moral group, we're a social value, we're family-oriented, and you have guys doing crazy things and the social things, cheating on their wives, their taxes, religions like Mormon. Would you agree, before you leave, Senator, back in the day, in the Ronald Reagan days, would Mitt Romney even be considered a front runner in the Republican
Party?
Look,
I go back longer than anyone on this phone call. Think about the fear when Kennedy ran because he was Catholic.
I mean,
we've come a long way from that. There's no question about that. That's a great – look, everyone in this country has to say kudos to the fact that we elected an African-American as our president. What a wonderful thing.
Exactly.
I mean, that is a fabulous thing to see in my – I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. What a wonderful thing.
Well, on
the other side, we've got a lot of states
wanting to leave the union. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, but think about that. I mean, so you're right. The fact that Romney had the nominations and more, these are wonderful things. We've taken religion and race out of a lot. There's always going to be bigots and people along the lines, but we rose above that, and that's an important aspect of things. And I hope to see in my lifetime a woman president and everything else like that. So there are a lot of positive things that are happening. I just think that the mistake we make too much is drawing party lines. And you're right. The far right is not representing the Republican, and the far left is not representing the Democratic Party. The problem is those are the loudest groups. So we hear the far right screaming and we hear the far left screaming. We kind of miss everyone in between, and most of us are in between.
That's true. And I actually believe there's going to be a new revelation. There's going to be a new Republican Party. The new voter, sorry, is one of them. Sorry, did you vote? You didn't vote the last election, but I hear you're leaning towards Republican, if I remember
right. I voted
right.
In the last election.
Oh,
you
I'm
better
sorry.
Vote in the last election. Come on.
I voted in the last election.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to out you. Wait till you get home, young lady.
That's true. Well, I'm signing off, but I want to thank you so much for allowing me to share this wonderful program with these wonderful people. You're great people.
Thank you, sir. We're leaving today. Everybody, the great Senator
Bye,
Robert
everyone.
Singer of New Jersey. I want to say goodbye to
As they say in California, surf's up. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for
thank
having
you very
us.
Much.
Love your show.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
I said thank you for having us.
Well,
I love your show.
You
and
you.
Your dad rock.
And that's Jeff. And that's Jeff.
I don't
who just said that.
I don't
Jeff
need
just
to be
said
there.
That. Your dad rock.
He's pretty good. He's not, he's not the normal politician.
No,
you know,
Jeff
he really
just
says
said,
it the way he is.
But sorry, Jeff just said your dad rocks. He wished he had an abortion.
No, I did not.
How dare you, sir? Where's my gavel? Sorry,
no,
we love
really,
you.
I mean, you guys
we
are
love
great.
You so much.
I love your show. Anytime,
you.
Let me know. Take
I
care.
Will. And you
have
will be, you know what? You could be our foreign political press. Yeah.
There you go.
Foreign I'm up for that.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen. Lover, hater, I love her. Sorry.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Thank you, sweetheart.
Take
love
care.
You to death.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Mr. Wayne, DCEO, how you'd like the show, sir?
Oh, man, it was great. It was great. It was great.
Thank you.
Great topics. You know, one you should keep in mind is one that he had mentioned towards the end of the show, and that's that topic of
keeping people poor.
Yeah, man. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's funny. And Jeff and Diane, will you please open your mic, please? What's funny about that, this is a guy who's a senator, a political person, who's coming out just saying how it is, you know?
Correct. And I like that. That's what I respect about him. That's why, I mean, he got my vote. And I don't even vote.
Oh,
he got mine. Wayne votes when he wants to vote.
Is he snapping?
The whole concept when he sat there and said, you know, there's reasons for it, and you had mentioned, stupid and ignorant, I think he said. And he had mentioned right back, he sat there and said, yeah. But the way that yeah came out was, it's like what I've always thought about. It's designed for that. So the poor people have an incentive to look forward to once they get this person into office. And that's crazy.
It is. And he got a great, and for a senator to say that, that the system is designed to keep people ignorant and poor, it speaks volumes. I mean, the guy, you know, that's not a politically correct answer.
Well, but it's the fucking truth.
But
that's
common sense, you know.
But when does a politician give you common sense? Nobody wants to hear it.
Exactly, exactly.
Hey,
that's
no
why
shit.
I sat there and said there needs to be a whole bunch of him. Shit.
Exactly.
A bunch of that guy, man, will make this country run good.
Exactly. Amen, brother.
Well, that journalist got upset.
Yeah, that's why he bailed.
He got his panties in a bunch.
And he's listening. Mr. Journalist, we love you. Good question. That's what it's about, is just opening up the question. I know you're listening. Come back to the show anytime. We love you to death. And, Jeff, I want to thank you for participating and asking the question and speaking your mind. And, of course, you, Mr. Wayne, DCEO, come get a record.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Joining. It's hard to do it because you want to sound halfway intelligent and with the help of Nicholas and sorry.
You're
and
the journalist, you know? That's why I say, hey, when you hear me shut up, I don't speak on shit I don't know.
Hey, look at me. I was saying
hummus
instead of Hamas.
Yeah, I know.
Hummus.
Yeah, hummus.
Hummus.
We're not eating
hummus.
Them. I couldn't even cover myself.
Give me some hummus and some Nye Bread. That's why I covered you up. I said hummus.
Thank you. I see that you tried, and I appreciate it.
I was
already dead.
Trying
to bury the body.
I wasn't sure if you said humans or humus. But I understood that you were trying to say hummus.
Yeah, the most informed show in the world.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah, we got, you know what, and to keep you updated on stuff, we got a lot of things coming up here soon.
It's just been a lot of crazy things are coming up. There might be even a we might even think about partnership up with somebody down, and so we can have another whole different office down there in LA.
Well, hey, is Neff still doing good, brother?
You know what he's doing? You know what I talked to? They discharged him yesterday.
God wow! Did. Congratulations.
Yeah. So he still got to do a little a little therapy, but he sounds great. He's still coming to it, and he's gonna take a little bit of time, but I know he's gonna be back 100%, if not 200. Simple as that.
Awesome, man. That's good news to hear. Give him my love.
I will. Maybe sometime this week, this coming up week, I can have him on the show,
I wish you would. I would love to hear his voice. And,
that would be awesome. That would be way awesome.
Thank you.
That
he misses you guys.
We love him. You know we do. And there's somebody we haven't heard about before from in a long time. Miss Diane, Lady Di.
Lady Di.
She's laying in bed saying, yes.
Oh, really?
You rang?
Yeah, you rang. Excuse me, it's nap time. Your show's on.
She was waiting for Fluffy White Chick.
Oh, my God. Were you there? Oh, Wayne wasn't even there.
No, what happened?
Well, the Mr. Journalist played Diana a compliment, I think. We got in the subject of black men with white girls.
Uh-huh.
And of course,
Grandpa Nigger.
Yeah, he attacked me. What did he call me? Oh, he said that he went to, nowadays, he has a daughter or son, I guess, and nowadays, where they are, there's Asians and Arabs and everybody's getting mixed and everything.
Yeah.
And pretty soon there's not going to be a race of black, white, whatever. They're going to be a combination. And he doesn't want to be Grandpa Nigger. Meaning that when they take the family picture, he's the only black dude in there.
Wow.
So he said that, and then Diane said something, and then he what did he say to you, Diane? I don't want him to say it.
Because I asked him, I said, well, what's a Grandpa Nigger? I've never heard of that. And then Brian was saying, Diane's such a sweet, nice, pretty lady or whatever.
He ended up calling
me Fluffy.
He called you Fluffy.
Ooh, Fluffy.
I have never heard that before either.
He thought you must be a nice fluffy girl. I felt like a fucking marshmallow.
I felt like a Stay Puff Fluffy.
Stay Puff.
Yeah, well, hey, it's no reason not, to date whoever you want to date, period. No matter who they are, I don't give a shit. It don't matter.
And I'm refrained from saying something rude because this is a important show and people listen to the archive, but I just wanted to say this, and I'll say it in the most correct political way I can. You could date, I agree with you, Mr. Wayne, DCO, come get a records. And we laughed about this because I was talking to Jeff before the show. He goes, when you always address Wayne, it's always Wayne DCO, come get a records. Why don't you just call him Wayne?
Well, that's what everybody calls me, actually. So I prefer that anyway. So I enjoy that.
I'll try to say this as politically correct as I can.
Did you hear that?
I'm going to try to, only one time I'll do this on the show, but I'll try to say it because it's such an important show. My penis only sees pink. The color of the woman is pink to him.
But are they potatoes?
I kind of just sold the show right there.
Hey, that's the way to go, Hey,
right. There's no color.
As long as it ain't shitty.
Look, well, there we go with the show going all the way down. When people get over color, we'll all hold hands and say we're one people, and that will happen. We got a black president, and we got Martin Luther King. We got John Lennon. We got Bush.
Kumbaya,
okay.
My lord.
And as soon as we all start saying we're one nation, one person, one people, living human beings.
You know what? Listen, we all came in the same way. We all coming out the same way.
That's
simple
true.
As that.
You ain't promised. We ain't promised to be rich. You ain't promised to be nothing. But you know what? There's one thing that's guaranteed in life, and that's death.
That is death.
If you fall and break your leg, or you fall and cut your hand, you're gonna bleed the same thing I bleed. So you know what? Don't let the outside attack your inside.
We all shit ourselves when we die.
And there's our show.
Yeah, there you go.
We can only maintain high maintenance for a certain period of time.
Hey, I hear you. I hear you.
But you slipped in the beginning and used the R word.
Did I say retards?
Yes, you did.
Oh my God.
About nephews with Down syndrome and hello.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm not perfect. I am the hammer. I'm here to bring people have a platform and they want to talk, and that's what I'm here for. I'm just a tool. I don't claim to be anything else.
A tool would be a word.
Exactly.
May not be the sharpest one, but...
Thank you very much. And that's coming from people who love me.
I do love you.
Tell me, you're the hammer tool.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And before we leave, we're going to go out right
now. We're all a bunch of misfits. It's all good.
We are. We are. And we represent a whole bunch of people.
I'll be down there in L.A. in April, April 10th. I'll be going down there to the breast cancer awareness.
Come
Hollywood. April 10th.
No, come on the 6th.
You gotta make it down 4 days earlier if you can, dude. It's a Saturday.
Oh, okay, shit.
That's right.
Your birthday. That's right.
Right.
That sounds good. Bring a couple bottles of champagne. You know, single, two girls to mingle, turn them side and jingle. You know, hey.
Hey, there'll be girls you can mingle with.
I'm sure there is. I'll go with two and leave with ten. How does that sound?
There you go. I will be the one in the corner with my girlfriend yelling at me. You can't miss me.
Lots of single girls, lots of Courvoisier. And
yeah, go ahead, tease me.
I'm not too much of a drinker, but when I do drink, I drink champagne.
There you go.
I'll drink five bottles of Moet like it's nothing.
Moet, dude. Oh, no. We'll be doing Cristal.
I prefer Dom Perignon over Cristal any day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus it's $100 cheaper. There you go.
I'm gonna ask this guy, what do you think of the show? Bystander? What do you think of the show?
Smash, smash, smash.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And that's from another guy who just called in. Hey, you guys, we're going to go to Diane and Jeff's party. They're turning 5-0. Have you heard Jeff just talk about it? Everybody's invited if you can hear my voice in Thousand Oaks.
Yes, bring it on, dude. We've got a pool.
How far are you from Hollywood? Where's that? Where's Sherman Oaks?
I'm only about 35 minutes from Sherman Oaks.
Oh, yeah, you're fine.
Okay.
Oh, no,
dude, not even
30.
Not
20,
even
30.
Yeah, dude,
20
from Sherman Oaks.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
And we're gonna be taken out by Wayne D, CEO. Come get a record song. I'm not gonna play the 49ers.
I'm about to roll one up. Damn it!
We're gonna be taken out with let's see, Fire. Where's Fire? Fire and Rain.
Oh, yeah.
How's that, Mr.
Thank
Wayne D,
you.
CEO?
That sounds great. You know what? Actually. There's another one that was sent to you if you have that loaded, but Fire and Rain will work.
Oh, I don't have that one loaded.
Okay, yeah, Fire and Rain will work.
We all got it loaded, and there's going to be plenty of medicinal.
There you go.
You know, I'll be down there with my Barney. Everybody go scream, Barney. No, let me stop.
I want to thank everybody for coming to our show. Mr. Wayne D, CEO, Come Get It Records. Mr. Jeffy Bertrand, who is the producer of the board. Miss Diane, Lady Di, Mir Dillon. Thank you so much. Kelly, who hung in with us as long as she can. She's lost her internet. She's in a snowstorm. Mr. Garuff. Mr. I want to thank you, sir, for coming on to the show.
Goroff. It's Goroff.
As long as it's not McGruff.
You know? Dude,
that's close.
Or Mr. McGruff.
I want to thank the journalists for coming on the show and participating. I want to thank Vinny DeVingo, which show's going to start in about an hour. Vinny DeVingo Show, my cousin Vinny. I'll say this again. It's 1:30 Pacific Standard Time, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. His numbers are blowing up. People are listening to my cousin Vinny as well as you should. We have T-shirts. I forgot. You guys, please hold on 1 second because we have a shout-out.
The senator.
Okay, we have a I'm glad I didn't. I got to play the music. Give him a proper shout-out. Please hang in there with me, guys. 1 minute. Here's the jingle.
Thank you so much for dropping me a line. I must not have gotten to my phone on time. It's either that or I didn't hear it ring. So please leave me a message when you hear the ding.
Ding. Oh, I love that voice. Here's a shout-out. First shout-out ever on the Brian and Hammer Jackson Show, and we'll be doing this a lot more. This guy's name is Alonzo Visionary Minds. He's on Facebook. Facebook.
Facebook? Oh,
yeah, you can tell I've been on here way too long. And what he says here is, we are looking for actors for our next Shortland, also a web series. If you're in or around the area, the tri-state area, I guess that's New York, New Jersey, whatever.
Yes, it would be.
And would like a chance to Skype auditions, please contact us at Visionary Minds, one word, visionaryminds0711@gmail.com. Send real headshots and ask to set up a good time for a Skype. Thank you from Visionary Mind Productions. And it has these on YouTube. Just search Visionary Minds on YouTube.
Thank you so much for dropping me a line.
And I also want to say the lady who gave us that good thing, Brian, I love you. It's a good show. Thank you very much. You are going to be sent out a limited edition. When I say limited edition, there's only one.
Oh,
a T-shirt that says, I heart to be hammered. It's a black T-shirt, and they're there. You're going to be sent out one of those T-shirts. Basically, it translates, I love to be hammered.
Those are cool.
Yeah.
I love to be hammered, too.
Well, we're going to see that on April 6th, buddy.
Uh-huh.
And ladies
God,
and gentlemen. Go ahead, bro.
I said, God, I hope so.
Oh, you will, and I'll make sure it's live and it's be on the radio.
Amen.
Dude, we are going to live stream it.
It's gonna be Brian the Hammer Jackson with his lady. We are gonna call her the Nail. She's gonna be your co-host that day.
I'll be the one caught up in a fetal position, sucking my thumb and told not to do what to do and how to talk.
Ooh-wee. I'll open my closet door and you'll be in there.
Oh, exactly. Oh, you know what happened to me last night? I don't have time to say that. I'll talk really fast. I was walking, trying to get some cigarettes, and I'm not kidding. It's about 9 p.m. I'm walking. All of a sudden, this huge coyote jumped from the bushes, knocked my leg to the side that close, looked at me like he was going to eat me, but he ran up the street.
He wanted some white meat?
I don't know. I'm serious. I'm a city guy. I'm not used to seeing a coyote jump up at me.
Dude, I know. A coyote in Burbank?
Yes.
He was like, you better catch his tail.
No kidding. So I'm saying, wow. So anyway, I just want to shout out to the coyote. Thanks for not eating me.
Beep, beep. No.
Yeah, really, that's right. And so, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, our own, very own Mr. Wayne D., CEO, Come Get It Records. This is his song, and you can hear him on it. He has a great voice. It's called.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you do. It's called Fire and Rain.
Under the 5 you ain't stuck up in the rain. I done been there, done that, bad.
clouds turn gray. Every day is cloudy, the little bitty city, one of them niggas be proud. Rich in California, but a storm won't tell me. But I stay SS17, they never found me. Never find me, only head about the storm. Light shining, now sun's feeling warm. Could it be finally protected? In this game, no longer neglected. There you go, you never get a second chance. You like the music, wanna play it, then you gotta dance. Face the facts, cause life's just that. You don't like it, well life's just that.
Somebody's coming into the studio. It's a gentleman with a turban. He looks Middle Eastern. Hello, gentleman in a turban. You want to talk about the Middle East? What? What are you doing?
Whoa, 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 whoa,